It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. A great show for you. Full panel today. John C. Dvorak, Lindsay Turrentine, Alan Malventano from PC Perspective, and our friend Mark Millian from Bleeding Week. We're going to talk about the Google barge. Apparently, it's sunk. Also, the best SSDs and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. This Week in Tech is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 469, recorded August 3rd, 2014. Call of Duty. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Jira, an Atlassian product. Jira is the project management solution for teams planning, building, and launching great products. To learn more about Jira, try it free for 30 days. Visit Atlassian.com/TWiT. And by Citrix GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from the convenience of your computer, smartphone, or tablet. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. You can start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting right now. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID Audible_com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to Squarespace.com. And use the offer code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. And for some reason, I don't know, there was a mix-up on the factory floor, and every single one of our hosts is in studio today. I think that's a blue moon. It happens every once in a while. I'll start over here with John C. Dvorak, also known as Brian Wilson in his Beach Boy shirt. You look good. Do you have a little box of sand for your bare feet?
I do. They're sitting in it right now. Move the camera down. You see him.
He's comfortable.
Oh, they can't do that.
He's comfortable. From the No Agenda Show, noagendashow.com and channeldvorak.com. Also here from CNET Reviews editor Lindsay Turrentine. You might see her almost every week.
Every Monday.
Every Monday on Tech Today. News Today. It's good to have you.
Thank you.
I've never met you, I don't think. Have we met?
This is very strange. No, we have not met.
Have we ever worked together?
No.
I can't believe that. You've been at CNET for how long?
15 years.
They
put me in a closet in the back, so I just kind of stay there.
15 you know, writing. Years?
Yeah.
What was years. CNET doing in 1999?
CNET was...
It was a TV network.
Well, actually, CNET launched as a TV network.
Right.
It was originally a cable...
I was the third employee. John and I were on their first pilot. Remember that, John?
Oh, yeah.
I had my hair was like Michael Douglas. It was like lacquered.
So in 1999...
You also had a different voice. It was interesting.
I talked like this.
No. 99...
In 99, the website had happened. It had been going for a few years, and it had sort of taken off. And the website was originally launched as kind of a pet project of the show.
Yeah.
Like, hey, there's this
Halsey Minor was very smart, because I think he realized that the TV wasn't the be-all and end-all, but it was a great vehicle for promoting a website. And by 1999, it was apparent that you could make money on the web.
Yeah, and the website just took off. And it was growing. When I started, it was growing really very quickly.
Yeah. And in fact, the big moneymaker, and I think it's probably still the case, has always been reviews, right?
Yeah. Well, reviews are very important. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows from an advertising perspective that it's important to be there, whether the review is positive or not.
Right on.
It's better to be there than to not be there. So good.
It's so good to have you. Thank you for joining us. Also a newbie on TWiT. Well, not also, because Lindsay was here once before. But it's so great to have you. Not a newbie on the network, but a newbie on the show. Alan Malventano, we have been a huge fan of Alan for a long time. I quote you all the time.
Thank you.
He is the SSD expert and a reviewer now, full-time at PC Perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Former Navy chief. That's how we met. Submariner.
Yes.
How much time under the ocean have you spent?
Have I spent?
Yeah.
I did 10 patrols. They were 3 months each, so
holy
30
cow.
Months under the water.
Do you go squirrely 3 months, you know, without air?
We make
they
the air.
Have,
they have
air.
We make it.
Oh, you're holding your breath.
We got to pull in. We're out of air.
No, it's a closed space.
It's triambolistic missile sub. They're 500 feet long.
It's pretty big.
How many men?
120.
In 500 feet. That's like 3.7 feet per person.
A lot of people get claustrophobia. You have to be tested. You have to be checked out to be a sub guy.
Did you pass the exam?
Yeah, I had to pass all
that
stuff.
What did they ask you, though? I mean, like...
I had to pass all the submarine
stuff. Have you ever seen a guy naked in a locker room? They ask you stuff like that?
No, they don't ask you stuff like that. No.
What do they ask you?
That's the Marines.
Wait, that's... Yes.
I'm going to end this line of questioning and move on. Mark Millian is also here from Week. We love Mark. He was one of the youngest reporters ever at the Los Angeles Times.
I don't know if that's true, but...
Wow. Come on, how old were you when you started?
I started as intern out of college, junior year of college.
Pretty young.
Yes, pretty young.
Pretty young. And a superstar, because you were young in the time, said, boy, what's this internet thing? What's going on here? We need a youngster to explain it. Then CNN, and you've been with Bloomberg Business Week, had one of those terminal cards for a long time now.
That's true.
Yeah.
Over 2 years.
Boy, there are a lot of stories today we could kick off with. I don't know exactly what I should begin with. I'm gonna bring up two stories that I feel like they're not true. And I'm just curious, the way the internet treated it was like, first, Facebook went down this week for 20 minutes. And a sergeant in the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department tweeted, yeah, Facebook's down. This is not an emergency. Please stop calling 911 to complain. And everybody loves this story. I mean, who doesn't love that story? There's the tweet from Sergeant Brian Brink. Facebook is not a law enforcement issue. Please don't call us about it being down. We don't know when we'll be back up. Now, as it turns out, he wasn't there. He had the day off. He was off duty when he tweeted this. And in fact, it looks like he might have been joking.
I believe it probably did happen. There's enough documentation for people making crazy 911 calls.
Sure. Oh, but yeah. The LA Sheriff's Department said it didn't happen. They're investigating Sergeant Brink. They said he made it up.
Maybe he was drunk.
He made it up. But you don't see a lot of that. Fortune interviewed him. And he said, yes, we've received several calls from dissatisfied Facebook users. He says, we get calls all the time, whether it be Facebook going down, people getting wrong orders at fast food restaurants, or their cable TV went out. The Sheriff's Department, understandably irritated, because I think they feel like people are making fun of them, too. And they were in great pains to say this hadn't happened.
Well, I think... Even if it didn't actually happen, I think his point is that it could easily happen. People call for all kinds of ridiculous reasons.
Well, I'm sure he's heard also. He's heard them all, right?
My Comcast is down. Call the cops.
Then the other one, maybe more. Anyway, I guess my point is, look how the press treated it. You didn't see any articles, or you saw a few articles saying that the LA Sheriff's Department's not happy about this. They're investigating. Most of the articles were... like with joy, saying, "See how stupid everybody is." Well, they call 911.
It's
link bait.
Yeah, link bait. Huh. Never heard of such a thing.
Oh, we're getting to you, John. We're getting to you.
What are you going to talk about?
You know what I'm going to talk about?
No, I have no idea.
The JavaScript engine that writes your art, can write your prose.
Yeah, what about it?
It did a good job.
Uh huh.
Okay. Well. Okay. I'll get you'll have a chance to rebut that, because I'm going to read three paragraphs and ask our incredibly intelligent audience which one is real, because only one of the three is real. The other two are computer-generated. I don't know why Philip Elmer DeWitt picked you. Do you have a little thing going on with him?
You know what? He did something interesting about 2.5 years ago.
Uh-huh. This is revenge coming in here. Okay, go ahead.
He reproduced the phony quote that was going around the net about how I said that the mouse would fail.
That was phony? I thought that was real.
And anyway,
it's not real?
No, it's not real.
I always believed it.
Yeah, no, you didn't. And so I sent him the article with the exact wordage, and then he apologized and then took it out of something he wrote for one of the magazines. And I never heard from him again.
I see that tweet all the time. People tweet it to me.
Yeah.
They said, John didn't believe the mouse would happen.
I believe the mouse will eventually still fail. I think time is on my side.
It was just a matter of timing.
Just the other way.
You were absolutely right.
I can wait it out.
Okay, you've got it on video.
I'll wait it out.
So I'll get to...
It'll keep me alive for years.
I'm going to do your story, since we've talked about Philip Elmer DeWitt. Then I'll talk about the amazing physics-defying rocket engine. Another story that everybody picked up, but I think is phony.
I get the sense it's phony, too.
We'll talk about that, but I want you to rebut this. It does feel a little bit like a hit piece. This, again, is Fortune. Philip Elmer DeWitt, who is, he's been Matt columnist. He's been around for even longer
than
you.
He's really bored if he's writing about me.
Output from a clickbait generator is nearly indistinguishable from what passes for tech journalism. That's a shot right at you.
Yeah, well, he'll get it back eventually.
Can you tell which of these paragraphs
and
was written?
And I have more longevity, so
I think you're right. I think he's in trouble.
Well,
I wouldn't. I would never write this. Can you tell which of these paragraphs was written by a veteran PC magazine columnist, John C. Dvorak, and which by a robot? So I'm going to read you three. I won't tell you the answer. They all sound like you.
Yeah, well, you can.
Number one.
I question whether
say,
a robot
actually, John, you should read these because it should be in your
voice. Well, give me the URL or something.
Yeah, yeah, here. Here's the computer. You read them.
I'll read them in my voice.
In your voice. Right, and that way they'll really sound like you wrote it.
Okay.
Except two will be sarcastic.
Two won't be real.
The House of Jobs was once a mighty innovator, reshaping industries. So this is nothing I would even come close to.
Oh, well, see, he knows.
First one down.
Don't prejudice.
Oh, okay.
The House of Jobs was once a mighty innovator.
The House of Jobs.
Reshaping industries so often, yeah. It seemed like it would never stop. But stop, it has. While people like John Gruber want to say this isn't a big deal for Apple, because it's still going to collect its $650 each iPhone and other retailers. So we disagree. Okay, that was that, John? Or LB,
before I begin... Oh, I'm doing my Jerry Pornell.
Yeah, doing his Jerry.
Let me start by saying that everything I say is out of love for Apple.
That sounds like you.
Yeah, it does. Sure. I've long admired the company. Yeah, that's me. And I'm eager to cheer it on again. Apple's board, chock full of environmental activists like Al Gore and Tim Cook, rarely miss a chance to polish their premium brand's image with the faithful climate change cabal.
That sounds like a line of yours. Faithful climate change cabal.
I would
cabal.
Never say that.
It's well written.
It's not even close. It's not well written. It's idiotic.
Third paragraph. One of these is real.
Now, I've said before that this Apple product won't get much further than any other computer watch, smartwatch, or anything else. I first wrote about this in 2012, an article worth rereading. You can also reread my most recent screed about why Apple should not do a watch. But in less than a month, I've changed my mind, kind of.
Okay, there's a couple of things wrong with that paragraph. A, you never change your mind. B,
I changed my mind constantly.
You wouldn't plug previous columns.
Two of them.
Twice in one paragraph.
I got a double plug.
That's the real, that is the real
That's
paragraph.
The giveaway.
Yeah. In fact, that's what Elmer DeWitt says. Can I call him Elmer?
Yeah, you call his name is
did.
Elmer.
That's what Elmer said, which is that, well, this is a giveaway because he plugged his own column twice.
Twice. Let's get that straight.
Those are well written.
No,
but he
not.
Also says that he took those sentences from writers
like
you.
John.
So we don't know if it's
no
actually
like
you
me.
Or writers like you.
I don't believe this is true.
So you could have written those.
No,
kind
I would have
of.
Never written any of this stuff. I don't go out of my way to talk about my love for Apple.
I've never heard
Please.
You say that phrase.
So I don't have a love for Microsoft either, by the way.
That paragraph was taken from David Pogue. I don't think that was taken from you.
Does sound like David
Pogue. Give me my laptop.
I love Apple.
Actually, there's no story here. This is a hit piece on John C. Dvorak.
What
did you do to get
very,
this guy's
very,
cheese?
I think he just has a grudge because I corrected him
about
years ago.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It doesn't bother me. It's publicity. And I got two more plugs in for that column. Those old columns.
Guy who actually
you just
wrote,
doubled your plugs.
Right. The guy who wrote the...
double my plugs.
The Apple clickbait generator is Kirk Lennon. And he was influenced by the Macalope, who's been on this show several times. Most of the sentences are clicked or culled verbatim from real clickbait articles. Some sentences I adapted. So if you want to try this out at home, you can go to the clickbait generator on
Kirk Lennon. I could go for that. It might come in handy. Although I think I can do better clickbait.
Well,
naturally,
I think it is the case
to need a computer to help me.
The best clickbait is human crafted.
Yes, handcrafted clickbait,
crafted
yes,
by
exactly.
professionals. We played before the show began yesterday's Daily Show segment on clickbait. did you see that?
Did my name come up in the conversation?
No.
Oh, man.
It was kind of sad. The correspondent took a, was it Lansing, Michigan? The last newspaper in Lansing, Michigan, which happens to be the student-run newspaper. They're all journalism students. He went to them and said, so what makes news? And they said, well, you know, it's got to be useful. It's got... He said, no, you're all wrong. And he then went to a former editor at Gawker and got little help in helping them make their articles more juicy.
Punchy. If you want to learn how to do punchy stuff, go to the bottom of almost any web page nowadays, and there's all this crap. What's the name of the company doing this?
Outbrain.
Crazy. Right. Outbrain.
Outbrain.
And you go to the bottom, you got these great headlines. They got a picture of some hottie or something. They say, oh, I don't know if I should... See,
I
the best butt in the world. Okay, yeah. I'll take and check it out.
I click it every time.
I don't. I resist those. So I will not. I don't
I
care who's
myself.
Got the best butt in the world because they never show it anyway.
Shouldn't every headline be bait, though? I mean, it is bait. That's what a headline is.
It's what traditionally
if, like,
it is.
A really well-written headline.
Well, you think of like the New York Post, famous headlines of the New York Post.
Yeah.
Because it was a tabloid
but
and you're walking
the
by.
The Daily News does those things, too.
Yeah.
They all do.
No, you're right.
There's two schools of thought there. There's a bunch of tech blogs that go sort of information heavy on their headlines so that, you know, they're very tweetable and in many cases.
They're very SEO-able.
Right.
Very SEO-able. Mm-hmm. There's a Twitter account, Saved You a Click.
Yes.
It's got like 130,000 followers, and it basically takes all these clickbait headlines and answers it for you without putting the link.
In one word, usually.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Retweet AOL, country's top paid singer isn't Taylor Swift, it's ... And then Saved You a Click writes, Toby Keith.
Saved you a click. This actually is a funny, although I just read an article saying this isn't so nice for various reasons. BuzzFeed wrote the article, of course, because... They don't want to save you.
Yeah, they were arguing against
it. So you're spoiling our surprises. Anyway, I feel like this. There is something to be said about the fact that the design... I agree with you, Lindsay, that headlines are about driving traffic, but there is a point where it goes so far that it really it's all about driving the traffic.
Right. No, it should be good. It should be solid. It should be a well-crafted...
It should be truthful.
It
should be accurate.
Accurate and heady, maybe. But it really should make you want to read the article.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if it doesn't,
fine.
Then
that's
nobody's
exactly
going to read what
correct.
You wrote.
I think that's not what people hate about clickbait. What they hate about it is it's so transparent. For instance, it tells you how to feel.
No,
you're going to burst into tears when you read this article.
Although it has to pay off. It has to be that. If it says that you're going to burst into tears,
well, actually,
you have to actually burst into tears.
My clickbait is really points to outstanding product. But the stuff at the bottom
you
of those,
invented clickbait.
I wish the stuff at the bottom is like junk. It's junk.
This
they promises
stuff.
That they and then the worst ones where you guys have run into this. You click on it and it takes you to some other vague page where you got to click on something else and you
that.
Got other clickbait on.
Or worse, a slideshow.
Oh,
a broken
I hate
slideshows. Yeah, because they get to load more.
Slideshows are a plague.
I didn't want
to. And I say that as being friends with Don Reisinger, who's actually perfected the slideshow.
Did he invent the slideshow?
No, he didn't invent it, but he's perfected it. He perfected it.
That might have been like Kodak.
I'm sure Ben Franklin invented the slideshow. But, no, and I don't want to get this into just a bitch fest about how bad web journalism is. Well, but it seems to pollute the waters a little bit.
It pollutes the waters.
So let's talk about this.
There's no journalism left.
Let's talk about this amazing physics-defying rocket engine.
Oh, dear.
Well, I'm glad I have smart people here because everybody, every tech blog, without exception, including Wired, which is normally very smart, kind of jumped on this because of the word NASA, because NASA was in it, right? The idea was that it had originally been created in 2001 by a guy who, I don't know, was a little bit like, use water to power your car.
That's not good.
Guy, in fact, raised something like £45,000 for the British government to devise a device. It was essentially a specially designed tin can. If you feed thousands of watts of microwave power into it, and they bounce around in the can, somehow, miraculously, the can propels itself. A small amount of power, it comes out of the can. So it's kind of a miracle because it defies the conservation of momentum. John Baez has actually a really good post on this. He's an actual quantum physicist on Google+, in which he says it's kind of like having the driver in the car push the wheel and making the car go forward. We know it's just not possible. He says he believes that this is completely bogus, and even that the NASA experiment, and that gives it some credibility, is bogus. And the amount of power it's creating is so small that it could easily simply be a measurement error.
Ah.
But it doesn't take a lot to move something in space.
No.
So even if it's
It's not that.
Tiny.
Yeah, if it were possible, it would be useful. It's not possible. It's a violation of classic physics that just doesn't work.
I would advise people to go to the YouTube and ask for... The YouTube. And ask for anti-gravity devices.
Yes, similar
to
that.
Some of these great videos that these kids have put together. My favorite one's a recent one with the phone. He drops the phone in there, and then the thing starts flying around. It's clearly got some piano wire on there or something. It's very funny.
Lisa's son, who's 11 and watches a lot of YouTube, told me yesterday, oh, you know they've invented hoverboards.
That's an old one. That's an old one.
And I said, no, I'm sorry, Michael. They don't actually, that's not possible. They don't have hoverboards.
But it was Doc Brown.
He says, no, it wasn't from Doc Brown. There's a YouTube video. A company made fake, you saw it, the fake hoverboard thing where they paint out.
Very
in the
well
screens.
Done.
Well done.
Well
they
done.
Paint out the bar that's holding up the hoverboard.
Yep.
But people believe this stuff. And what it is an argument for critical thinking, or better critical thinking.
Yeah, well, it's a fail.
So Baez, who is an actual quantum scientist, says that the NASA scientists say test results indicate that the RF resonant cavity thruster design, which is unique as an electric propulsion device, is producing a force that's not attributable to any classical electromagnetic phenomenon, is therefore potentially demonstrating an interaction with the quantum vacuum virtual plasma. And everybody picked up that line. It must be the quantum vacuum virtual plasma. Baez says that's bullshit. If you'll forgive. But he says, but it's grad school bullshit. He says, quantum vacuum virtual plasma is something you'd say if you failed a course in quantum field theory and then smoked too much weed. There is no such thing as virtual plasma. If you want to report experimental results that seem to violate the known laws of physics, fine. But it doesn't help your credibility to make up goofy pseudo-explanations. In any event, this is another example of maybe these guys don't have the scientific knowledge to write the article, and so they're just kind of, well, it's NASA, it must be true. But this story made the rounds too, completely uncritically. Everybody believes it. It's not true. I don't think it's true. I think it's just BS. There's a sucker born every minute.
Yep.
Okay. Nothing to say.
Well, that was the end of that. That really killed the conversation. Well, Nobody knows what to tell you. It's not true.
And
look,
I'm just,
it's not true.
And I don't think people called 911 to complain Facebook was
I
down.
I think they did.
You think they did?
Because they call about the dumbest stuff.
See, we all believe people are dumb.
No. Some people are dumb.
There's a,
not people.
I'm going to take a break.
Okay, good.
This is
it's about
a
time.
Smart crowd. And they aren't fooled by that stuff. Actually, we should do a poll.
How many people
think somebody actually called the L.A. Sheriff's Department to complain that Facebook was down? Does that seem credible?
I think that might be possible.
Jammer, everybody, the whole audience. Yeah. Of course that happened. Because we all know somebody would do that. All right.
Facebook's down.
the sheriff also said, people said, what, my power's out. That's reasonable. I'd call 911.
No, you wouldn't.
Well, I would call the PG&E, but. 911's like emergency. There's an emergency. Facebook is down. Emergency, emergency.
Maybe somebody wasn't getting enough likes and it was an emergency to them. Facebook should be banned.
Do you like my new phone, by the way? Have you played with that at all?
You know, I don't know. It's okay.
$350 for 64 gigabytes.
Yeah, I know. You kept saying that.
Did you guys review the OnePlus one?
We have looked at it, yes.
The problem is you can't buy it.
Well, then what good is it?
Well, you can't. You have to get an invite. Well, that's what's weird about it. I feel like there's something we don't know. There's something missing here in this story. Why would a company make a phone, sell it for such a low price? It's a flagship killer, they call it. And it's true. It has, in every respect, top-of-the-line specs.
Yeah.
And at half the price of every other flagship phone.
Okay.
But you have to get an invite or play a contest to get it.
You have to do a contest.
I think that's savvy marketing.
If at some point you sell a lot of phones...
Don't you think the price alone would be a savvy marketing startup, and they're still trying to.
So
like,
you think at some point the dam will open and they'll sell?
Does the back come off?
They're kind of basically copying the Xiaomi model, but for the Western market.
This is like the Xiaomi. The big Xiaomi is a very nice phone.
It's very pretty.
You create a similar model.
Don't take the
feeling of exclusivity.
He's like John's just ripping the phone.
It does.
It comes off, but it doesn't give you access to anything. You can only replace it with a different color back.
Yeah,
but it feels exclusive.
You just said so. Okay, let's take it off.
I saw the Xiaomi. Ryan actually ordered one.
How do you get it?
And
off?
Reviewed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason Howell of All About Android loved the Xiaomi.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels exclusive. Well, it's like Gmail. I mean, when Gmail was in beta, people were selling their Gmail invites on eBay
because you can't get the back off.
Exactly. It's sort of like, it's beautiful.
Give me the phone back before you.
A few reviewers have given it very positive reviews.
I think it's excellent. It's an excellent phone.
And then it's not really available, so people build up excitement around it. And then when it does become available to lots of people, they'll get it.
Did you
give it needless free publicity? This phone should not even be on the
show. Did you at CNET? Well, did you debate at CNET? Should we review this phone if it's not widely available?
No, we actually didn't debate it. We're eager to do it because it is not widely available.
Right.
And although it is available.
Makes no sense.
Right? So somebody has to make a decision if they're going to spend some money on it.
Yeah,
my decision would be to
stiff them.
But also, it's just interesting, right? All of these startups out of China are interesting.
There's no
CDMA?
There's a SIM card slot.
Is it a CDMA?
No, there's a SIM card slot right here.
Let's see. Pull it out.
I don't have a... What do you mean, pull out my SIM card?
I want to see it.
Why would I pull out my SIM card?
I want to see if there's a SIM card in
there. It looks just like a SIM card. I put it in, so I know it's there.
Okay,
trust me.
You know for a fact that you can put one in.
Yeah, because I put one in.
And you can take it out.
It's got my phone number. It's an AT&T SIM. You could put a T-Mobile SIM in it as well.
Okay. So it's GSM.
It's GSM. That's right.
Can I see it again?
All right, guys.
I have a feeling something bad is about to happen. While I let John fiddle with my phone, let's talk about Jira. You know, the original name for Godzilla in Japanese is Gojira. I think Atlassian knew that. Jira is one of the world's most powerful and customizable issue and project management systems used by big companies. NASA uses it. As Chad has told us before, Mojang uses it for Minecraft. In fact, if you ever file a Minecraft bug report, you're filing it through Jira. It captures and organizes your workflow so you can prioritize and take action on what's important while staying up to date with the activity going around with you. It's simple enough for a small team. It's powerful enough for a 100,000-person enterprise. That's why 25,000 companies use Jira. 70% of the Fortune 100. NASA uses Jira. Jira is incredibly flexible and extendable. Of course, there are literally hundreds of add-ons for Jira. Test management, time tracking, project management. If you're using, you know, if your issues involve code, they tie everything together from an initial planning doc, the files, the change sets in your code repository, right through to deployment. Git, of course, completely integrated. They've got REST APIs, so if it doesn't, you know, if there's not a module for what you want to do and a plugin, you can easily build one. Flexible and simple, it is amazing, and I want you to try it right now for 30 days free. Go to Atlassian, Atlassian.com/twit for more information. You've heard of Jira. I'm sure you have. If you're on a team, if you're a programmer, if you've shipped products, you've heard of Jira. Now you can try it free for 30 days. Monthly plans start at $10 a month for up to 10 users, so it's very affordable. Atlassian.com/twit. Consider it. Jira. This is a story that bothered me in some ways, and I don't know what what I do every week is I put together stories that bother me, and I give you and I come to you and I say, explain to me. A Houston man is being charged for child pornography in his email. The police say they know about it because Google tipped them off. Now, I am not in favor of child pornography. I'm glad they got the guy if that's what he was doing. But is it at all troubling that Google, apparently, according to the police who told this to KHAU TV in Houston, Google spotted three allegedly pornographic images of children in his Gmail and tipped off the National Center for Missing and Exploited Kids?
Wonder how that worked.
Yeah, CNET.
Like what kind of
Google scanning is doing?
Chris Matistic. Matistic?
Yeah.
Doesn't look like Matistic to me. Matistic. Okay. I'll take your word for it. People never get that guy's name right.
No, I think he likes it, though.
I've been saying it wrong for 20 years.
I'm pretty sure he enjoys it.
Matyszczyk. Matistic.
Yeah.
I'd change the spelling. You speak Polish, obviously.
Obviously.
Or Czech, or whatever this is.
Whatever it is.
Anyway, Chris contacted Google. They have not responded. He also asked whether it's part of their standard operating policy.
Of course it is.
Well, it's clear that...
It's not a coincidence.
This is what bothers me. We know Google scans your email.
Yeah.
But mechanically, looking for keywords.
Mm-hmm. They might kick something out.
It sounds like a human might have looked at it.
No, probably
this could be done mechanically, too. They have facial and, like, skin recognition for images.
Probably the same way Facebook alerts when there's nudity.
Yeah.
Okay, but are you telling me Gmail's scanning my email for nudity?
Yeah, yeah. So they're probably stopping a lot with your stuff.
Because you couldn't, you wouldn't on the face of it know that it's a kid. Unless they have some magic scanner that says that's a nude kid.
No, they probably, I think they kick it out. And
if there's nudity, they kick it out?
And then the people look at it and go, oh, that's all good stuff.
Well, they have a back end, the Google image search engine, right? So yeah. Maybe there's something that was in there that was flagged for child porn in the past, and then they just it over to the email.
Chad has found an additional story. This is a statement from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. See, this is not Google.
No, this is from, that center that says since 2008 we've had a hashing technology to tag known child sexual abuse images and identify them.
So maybe they gave that to Google?
Well, there you go.
I guess they give them a database of
that could be.
Troublesome images
that makes sense.
And Google.
Oh, maybe they're known images. Okay, that would do it.
Yeah.
And that's what the hashing would do. This is a known image. It's circulated. And as soon as they get a child porn image, they create a hash and then they give it to Google. And Google's matching images.
Well, Google does have image search.
And it has safe search. Google already has to.
I understand. I wouldn't feel that good. Skin search, I understand.
Skin search?
Why? Yeah, no, if there's a certain percentage of flesh, if it exceeds like 40% flesh.
But if the person's got a lot of tattoos, would that be different?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I understand that. But that still would be troubling because you'd have to you'd have to actually look at it to know it's child pornography. So what you're saying is, it was a known image that they had a hash for. That would make sense.
Google hasn't confirmed this is a known image.
No, but I think thank you, Chet. Was that Business Insider?
Yes.
All right.
It makes
Article
a lot of
be
sense.
In the show notes.
It makes a lot of sense that Google's looking at everything anyway. I think Google is looking at everything.
But if Google put itself in a position to police the world that way, I think that you must be right. There's some sort of
This really relieves me.
And it probably relieves. What I mean, I can't imagine that Google would sign itself up for that.
I don't want any human at Google looking at my email. It's fine if a machine scans it. I don't have a problem with that.
Google is going to have humans at some point looking at your email.
Well, we know the NSA is looking at your email. Snowden revealed that they actually young NSA
Google,
analysts
NSA,
pass around.
I don't see the difference.
You think Google's doing that?
Well, not routine. I mean, I have a counter to that.
Counter that because you're probably involved in Homeland Security when you were in the Navy, yeah?
My last 3 years in the Navy was for the NSA.
There you go. Now we got some. And now, Leo, you're on some watch list.
And I'll just say that I've never seen anybody just passing around. Here's this image from this guy.
Were you a contractor?
I was a reverse engineer. I reverse engineered malware.
Okay, but if you're in the reverse engineer malware department,
there's other departments. I walk around the building.
They don't go like, "Hey, quick, go over to the reverse engineer malware department and show them this picture."
Yeah, we don't have like
they're bored.
There's not. Yeah, these things.
Jeez.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad to have you on. I'm going to change the rundown just a little bit here.
Use Gmail anyway.
I guess I did know that. I must have known that.
I might have not. Gotten into
you didn't
all
mention
the gory
it because,
details.
Because it was classified.
That's true.
I knew you were doing IT type stuff for the
type
Navy.
Type stuff, yes.
Yeah.
So my tour in Virginia was Naval Cyber Defense Operations Command.
Yes, I remember
I
that
gave you a coin.
I have a coin.
I gave you a coin.
Virginia is the giveaway.
Virginia, yes.
Should have known. It was McLean.
Those are the guys that
McLean,
do all the...
oh my God.
They do all the network defense. So they make sure no other countries hack into the Navy.
Good.
Right.
Navy was the word I was fixated on.
But then after that, I did more joint
stuff.
That's
neat. So what's it like in there?
It's very boring.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Reverse engineering malware by like decompiling it and...
Yeah, some, you know...
To what end? Like so we can make our own?
So we can defend against it.
So we can find it. Not so we can make our own.
No, not to make our own.
Well, not in his department.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there are departments where they're making...
Well, we know that. I mean, well, what do you think of the Snowden leaks then? You must have an opinion on all this. This is going to be a long conversation.
I have to tread carefully. Actually, I think
I want you to be brutally honest.
I think it was last week that you were talking about a different story, right? There was a different NSA story you talked about last week.
There's an NSA story
every week since
June, yeah.
But they were going into like that these analysts could just go through anything, and they made it sound like... There were no rules. There were no laws. And people can just do whatever.
I know there are rules and laws.
Exactly. That's my biggest counter to that is that there are rules and laws. And we were like just trained endlessly as analysts. Hey, if you see this.
This is what the rules are.
If it's a U.S. person, nope, sorry, that's You're not keeping that.
Right.
You're not supposed to write any reports on that, nothing. If it happens to be in a database, it was just by accident, basically.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, we don't just, like,
there's
not enough time.
I never questioned that. And I don't even think Edward Snowden questioned that. Although we know a few things. First of all, we know that the intelligence community basically has lied for quite some time to Congress. And in fact, the latest story is that the CIA was monitoring the committee, the congressional committee, investigating it and hacking into its computers and admitted it after lying about it for some time. So we know the intelligence community lies to Congress. So that's the oversight portion of this, right? So, yes, it's good to say there's a rule, and I understand there's a rule, and it's good that they train you. That's really great.
Oh, yeah.
But if at the very top, culture of defying the congressional oversight, that's not encouraging.
There's, along those lines, like what I kind of had the big
you
issue
deal
was.
With that, of course.
No, I was nowhere near that level. But where I had the big issue was that there was an IT person, Snowden, right?
Right.
That's what he did.
He was
in IT. Those guys should not have any kind of access to those databases because then there is no oversight for them. Like if I did some kind of search on somebody else has oversight over me to do like a kind of a check and balance, like an audit and surveillance sort of thing. Any query I did, somebody else above me would see that come across.
Do you think Snowden made it up or do you think those are legitimate documents?
He had access to a lot from what it looks like.
It's too much of it to make up.
Right.
So how did he get access?
Who knows?
Yeah.
That's what I think. There should have been more, more careful rules in place and that sort of thing. And I think maybe they might have gotten a little bit lazy on how they were maintaining their IT infrastructure.
I mean, I understand humans. It's human nature. Human nature. You find that's kind of a hot picture. Let me just.
That's probably going on at the Google Mail as we speak.
Yeah, they're looking at your email.
Somebody in the chat room, and I don't know how they know this, and it could be BS for all I know, says that the way Google works is there's a threshold, a score threshold. If your mail exceeds that threshold, a human does, in fact, start looking at it.
A score threshold for what?
Well, that's what's unclear.
Images?
No, not merely with images, but in order to improve their services.
Oh, yeah, that's the reason. I knew there was a reason.
Air quotes.
To give you ads that you want.
Well, I don't have a problem with ads. I have a little more of a problem with a government spying on me than with a corporation trying to give me better ads.
Yeah, but they're not. Are you getting better ads? I'm not getting better ads.
So your problem is that it's not working well?
It doesn't work at all. It's a scam.
So if it worked better?
It's a scam for the sucker people in
You're saying if
investing.
It worked better, it'd be okay with you?
No, I don't like it.
I have to say, it's not Google,
like
but
the
Facebook...
The food is terrible here, and the portions are
exactly,
so small.
Woody Allen.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Lindsay.
Oh, it's fine. Facebook's a little bit different, but they do very similar things. And I will say this. Facebook ads, I love them. I have discovered multiple services and things that I buy and have spent money on.
In your
Facebook
case,
ads.
They're pretty accurate.
They're really accurate and stunningly so. Like, oh, my gosh, I must have those earrings. How did they know?
And how did they know?
I don't know. Some combination of age, profession, and what my friends do in life.
We're looking at your browsing history.
Yep. Well, and I'm not just talking about the ads that follow me around the internet. I mean, these are new things that I've never seen before.
They're not just looking at your browsing history. They know like what you liked, what some article somebody else posted, and
exactly.
then you liked it specifically. So
yep. And they know what they my really friends know. Like and what my friends spend money on.
Right.
Well, also they know you and they have your Facebook token, and every time you go to a page with a like button, they're saying, oh, here comes Lindsay again. Oh, here comes Lindsay again. So they actually have a pretty good, given that most pages now have like buttons, they have a pretty good idea of where you go,
what
you
although
do.
What's interesting about this is that I only like brands that are in the media for professional reasons. I actually don't, as a rule, I don't like brands on Facebook because I don't want them cluttering my feed. So it's not just that. It's a pretty rich combination of things, but I've just been impressed by, I mean, it's kind of creepy, but how effective it's been for me.
So this is interesting. I'm looking at my Facebook ads. They're a pre-order for a $20 thing. I can stick to anything and find it with my iOS device. I'm a geek.
You would use that?
Yeah. Well, no, I wouldn't, but that's for Snapple.
Actually, it's not a bad idea if you lose
Snapple,
your keys.
I don't know why I'm getting an ad for
Snapple.
Snapple. Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't drink Snapple.
Well, that's something to
Maybe
that.
You should.
But I should. The Lucille Packard Stanford Children's Center, which is a charity. And United Way of the Wine Country. They must think I'm very
generous. They think
that? I think I'm generous.
Well, see, that shows how screwed up it is.
And then the Uptown Nightclub.
there you go.
They know you like to go clubbing.
Where is the Uptown? I
have an Uptown
in Oakland.
So City College of San Francisco. You're
sitting
and
up there on
boxer shorts.
Yes. So we know. Are you wearing briefs or boxers?
I'm wearing boxers.
See? They know what underwear you're wearing.
So what? Are you going to buy more boxers because of this ad?
Maybe.
I just did, actually.
Okay, well, I give up. I've tried my best. But everybody's all in on this. Sure, follow me around.
We're just saying that it works, not that it's morally
You guys are wonderful. You love it.
He says it doesn't work and it's morally...
I hate it. I just dislike it.
Do you not use Google?
I use Google.
Do you take steps to anonymize yourself?
Often.
Yeah.
Not always. I don't really care. But yeah. I've done it once.
You hate
in a while.
It, but you don't really care.
I hate it. I do care.
You hate
but,
it on principle.
Now, here's what the problem
but
is.
You don't personally care. No, I understand that. That's
no, you
not.
Don't. No, yeah, you're just mocking me.
No, I'm not.
Because you're all in on this.
No, I understand.
No,
how
I
you
understand.
Could,
I know what you're
I understand
mocking
you
me.
Could hate it on principle, but not care that much, so you do it.
Right, that's exactly
no,
it.
No, I understand
no,
that.
No, I get it. I'm fine. I'll shut up.
Do you? But you hate it on principle.
I hate it. Period.
Period.
It's not on principle, off principle, yeah. You know, anything. It's just I don't like the idea of being tracked like a dog.
This tile sticker, you could put this on your forehead and then we would never have
I could find myself.
We'd find you everywhere you are.
You put it on everything.
All right. I'm sad about this. The Google barge. I'm really sad. We'll talk about the Google barge in just a bit. I got to take a break.
Didn't you have a commercial a minute ago?
We do commercials every few minutes.
Okay.
It's a new thing on Twitch.
I've heard that.
We basically stop whenever possible. I can go on. I don't have to do a
commercial. No, do a commercial. Is
no,
it a good
fine.
One? Who's it for?
It's for GoToMeeting. You like GoToMeeting.
Oh, yeah, they're good guys.
Have you ever used GoToMeeting?
Yeah, I did, as a matter of
we
fact.
All, you know, when we have meetings, we just use it the other day. We do, every time we do a phone conference, instead of doing just like a phone bridge, you could do that. We have phone bridge capability.
You do?
Sure we do. We have
this place has phone bridge capability?
Absolutely.
Huh.
But here's the thing. Every once in a while, you're in this meeting. In fact, we were in this meeting, and somebody says, well, let me show you. And then, because we're in GoToMeeting, all of a sudden, we can see their screen, and we can hand it around. In fact, they said, could you hand me the screen? And I didn't know what. And then I realized, oh, we're in GoToMeeting. I just click this button, and now he's got control of the screen. And then we turn on the cameras, and we're seeing each other. It's really kind of amazing. It's a great way to make meetings more effective.
Do you have a special offer or anything that you can help people out with?
30 days free. How about that? Try it. Try it free. If you don't believe me, visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Just use TWIT as the promo code. It is the number one most popular online meeting service, and it's because it's easy, it's fast, it's the best. I want you to try it today. GoToMeeting.com. Just use TWIT as the promo code. See, that was easy. Click the orange button, try it free.
You know, there's the other guys who all gone out of business. There was one that just sucked.
Well, that,
I remember
probably
that.
Why they went out of business.
Was it WebEx?
WebEx, yeah.
Yeah, I remember them.
Oh, WebEx.
It was terrible.
Did you use that in the Navy? No, the NSA.
Well, you tried to
what does the NSA use for conferencing?
They can't say.
I can either confirm or deny.
Watching him, it must be WebEx.
I'm really intrigued.
When you're at that level, everything they do is it's off the shelf stuff, but it's all on a their own secret or higher network.
There's a computer over here that has like orange plugs that you use this for that kind.
No,
of
it's at your desk, but it does have orange plugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, I knew that. And then I remember when I was at McLean.
That's suspicious.
And then
Yes. How do you know that? I want to know.
Yeah, really. I'd like to know too.
Did I say orange plugs?
You did.
No, is it on a separate network?
Totally.
So that the spy stuff doesn't get mixed in with the GoToMeeting.
I mean, it
stuff.
Goes over the internet at some point, but
yeah,
it goes
but
through
not
you know
until
insane
after it
insane crypto yeah, to yeah. get there. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I could work for them.
Yeah, you could. I think you are.
if they asked. I went to see...
can I ask a question?
Yes.
Because somebody in the chat room brought this up.
Please, bring
whatever
it up.
Happened to StickCam?
StickCam. Huh. So we used StickCam when we first started.
When you started, I remember
they went
this.
Out of business.
Why? How? How could you go out of business in this day and age?
Because it's very, very expensive to do what StickCam, Ustream... and Justin TV do, which is to basically give you in kind of unlimited free bandwidth. All the stuff.
Well, how did these other guys?
There you go.
Business.
Thank you and farewell. And it looks like a yellow stormtrooper helmet. I don't think that's what they mean.
I think it's what they mean.
Yeah, they went out of business because it's very expensive unless you can...
Well, how can these other guys stay in business? U.S. Stream has been in business before they were.
It's a better run business. I think Ustream probably put StickCam out of business, really. You know what's interesting? Twitch TV, which is another example of a very expensive business,
Twitch
just sold to Google for $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So they made a pretty good exit out of that.
Well, they have built an audience for very specific kinds of activities. So they, you know, I mean... That makes a ton of sense for Google. They sort of bring an entire new young audience engaged in gaming.
Well, also, what is the biggest stuff content on YouTube right now? It's this kind of content.
It's my son watching people play Minecraft.
Yes.
Yep.
That is what it is.
How old is your son?
He is 11.
11. Michael 11. That's all he does. He doesn't watch TV.
Actually, my daughter, who's 8, might watch more of it. She loves to watch other kids play.
Do either of your kids watch like TV?
No, they don't like it.
No. This got to be driving television and ad
I don't understand how they're
nuts.
Not having meetings 24/7.
Must
on this.
Drive them crazy.
Well, that's why Google bought.
But you know who else it drives crazy? YouTube, because they know they've got this captive audience and they cannot figure out for the life of them what to do with it. They cannot figure out how to monetize it. I believe this is the dirty little secret of YouTube is that they are not getting much money for those ads because those ads aren't worth much. Your 11-year-old doesn't see them. Your 11-year-old clicks the video. If there's pre-roll, he goes off and does something else.
Actually, no. My 11-year-old, I believe that children are the most, and this is kind of scary, but the most susceptible to advertising.
Well,
they'll sort of watch anything that moves.
But don't you think
if the ad is clever in any way,
they'll watch it.
They'll be like, wow, that was funny.
Yeah, I'd be freaked out if I were in
So it's all in the creative.
Because you know that everybody growing up now just doesn't watch TV.
No, but they're watching all this stuff.
And they're watching YouTube and Twitch like nuts, like crazy.
Advertisers will figure it out. If there's a way, the advertising industry will figure it out.
Well, they're going to figure out that there's a lot of this is a waste of their money, too. They haven't figured that part out yet.
See, that's what I kind of feel like YouTube. I know you say that the kids are getting influenced, but maybe they are. Maybe the young ones are.
I mean, I hope they don't.
I don't see banner ads. Do you see banner ads?
No, it's the pre-roll.
But even the pre-roll. Don't you just hover over the skip ad until
four, three, exactly.
I actually avert my eyes. I don't want to see the ad.
But we're all adults. The kids will be drawn into the pre-roll.
Now that's interesting.
I'm not sure of this.
So maybe they're thinking, right now it's not worth much, but it's going to be.
I think so, and I think that they're testing ways in which they can make that advertising powerful enough to be content on its own, which is always the deal in advertising,
it's
right?
It's tricksy, though, because those of us who still watch TV don't see ads because we DVR everything and we skip them. And this generation, your kids' generation, is going to totally...
They get this new thing with Comcast. It won't let you skip ads.
I know. I hate the on-demand stuff. That's why I TiVo it.
You got the middleman. You took into... Okay. That's not a bad idea.
Took the Comcast out of the equation there.
Yeah. That's the way to go.
They can't stop you from skipping on TiVo, which is why they put Replay out of business, and I'm sure would love to put TiVo out of business.
Mm.
What was I going to talk about? I mentioned
Google Barge.
So the barge is dead.
The barge.
That's sad. They're selling it for scrap.
It looks like scrap.
They spent millions. First of all, the barge itself, they estimate it's worth about $4 million. Who knew that a barge is worth? I mean, this is a rusty hulk. That just floats. It doesn't have much.
What's going to be a floating? What was it going to be? A floating store?
Showroom? Yeah.
Showroom.
Google Glass.
Like an Apple store.
So $4 million for the barge.
Right. A mobile Apple store.
And then they put 63 shipping containers on it, which they then, I guess, hollowed out and turned into a high tech showroom of some kind. Now there are several of these barges. We have one in San Francisco, which has not yet been sold for scrap.
I think they should turn it over to the homeless.
But Portland, Maine had one also that was built in New London, Connecticut, where all of the submarines are built.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So do we know anybody that's been on that thing?
No. Do you?
Nobody?
No. Daniel Turtleman at CNET is the one who broke the story originally and found it in the bay, in San Francisco Bay, the San Francisco one. But he's never been on it, to my knowledge. He's walked around it.
And now he
Maybe the whole story is just a fraud.
No, Google
just to
admits
get publicity.
It. Google admits
well,
it.
Well, they can say whatever they want.
They were going to float it down to New York City from Portland, Maine, but the problem with the San Francisco one is you can't. You're not. It's like they didn't have any permits. The permits that you need to.
How dumb are they? Seriously.
It's not how dumb. It's how much money they have. They have silly money.
They and have so, silly money. Nobody thinks that you need permits to do this sort
care.
Of thing.
They didn't care.
They might be able to use them.
Is related to their threats to start ferrying employees from San Francisco down? San Francisco wouldn't let them.
They're going to put them in the barge.
Because they ended up getting the slaves. Bus. They paid like, you know, $5 a bus. Or
get
something.
In and row.
They can do the Google buses. Yeah. That would
have been funny. Tomorrow on Triangulation, Kevin Rose is going to be here. Who is the poster child for the gentrification of San Francisco.
No. Well, not because he wants to be.
Not because he wants to be.
Protested at his home.
But they protested at his home.
Uh-huh.
They named him. They called him out and said, it's your fault, Kevin Rose.
You might as well blame him.
So we'll ask him about this tomorrow. He works at Google. He's at Google.
He's probably been on that barge.
He's must have been on. It was probably his idea.
I put $10 down. He hasn't been on the barge.
I'm going to ask him tomorrow.
I kind of wonder what the demise of the barge has to do with just Google's plans to sell hardware. I mean, they obviously had some plans.
Now you're connecting the dots.
They're selling plenty of hardware.
Well, but you know, they backed off a little bit. The glass, that's kind of not been a very successful.
Yeah. Well,
They never went past
they've tried
beta.
And they've got Diane von Furstenberg making Google Glass.
Yeah,
frames.
I know, but who the hell's going to wear this stuff? This is just asking for trouble
there's
to wear
right
those
there.
Things.
Right there. Right there.
Oh, hi there.
Right there.
How are you doing? He's wearing glass. Good seeing you.
Yeah.
They're all about the smart home now, and probably a boat is not the best place to sell home appliances.
Well, it's for houseboats.
Only in Tiburon.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they bought Nest, right?
They bought Nest. I mean, they clearly have some hardware ambitions.
Yeah. They do, but I think their hardware ambitions are all as a showcase for their software
right.
and services.
Well, I am
right?
wearing an Android Wear watch.
Yeah.
It's not made by Google.
Watch.
Oh, God. Is there any way to turn this into a Russian watch? Because if there is,
he's going
to
figure it out.
Find it.
All right, it's not locked. It's tied to that phone, so please
enjoy. It's tied to this phone.
Of course it is. I kind of like it. I mean, it's not.
What happened to that other watch you had that was at the screen? The whatever with
the
Pebble.
Basis, the Pebble. Chad's wearing the Pebble. He likes it, but I think he'd like an Android Wear, wouldn't you, Chad? Really, deep down in your heart of hearts.
6 minutes yeah, I think to home. Would. You're that close.
That's he's probably waiting for Moto 360.
Isn't that cool? So you could kind of see stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, great.
I could see the giant square. It's like a little useful. It's not a lot useful. It's like a little useful. It's not like something you'd run out and say, you've got to have this.
Well, but once Google
who's
perfects the Google
is
Now
like
and all the Google
right.
cards and the information, you know.
The challenge for Google is to really make that useful, it has to get creepy a little bit. And it's people
get
like
creepy?
John. Well, it's people like John. Who wants to make sure that people like John don't all of a sudden get up in arms and say, oh, Google's really crossed the line now.
But I don't really, say stuff like that.
Really for it? Well, that machine did maybe, the JavaScript John General.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But no, you know what I'm saying. You got to be careful because the press and more importantly, the general public might come to the conclusion that Google has finally become creepy. But
finally?
Really for Google now, I don't think they're creepy yet.
Google now is kind of creepy.
You know, so this happened to me the other day. I bought movie tickets online.
Yeah.
And I had not, and in any way combined, you know, formally said, hey, Google, when I buy movie tickets and I get an email confirmation, I want to know about
Google.
It.
Except that it sees it in your
it
Gmail.
It sees it in my Gmail, and I got a Google Now alert that
that's
says, leave now for your movie.
That's great.
Right. I had already left, so it wasn't that great. But if I had it on a watch, that would be much handier. Yeah.
When I opened an email, it said, it got your first part of that sentence.
Well, the problem with the watch is a very small screen, so you get a little bit of the now.
It has to talk to you. Yeah.
But it does very much, that's exactly the use case. And that's what I mean by it has to get more creepy. It has to get more predictive about what you're doing, has to be more aware of what you might be doing, and then has to tell you stuff that's going to be useful before you knew it. And that's even what Eric Schmidt said all along, is that to really for us to succeed, we can't be reactive. We have to be proactive. Mm-hmm. We have to come up with what you want before you know you want it. But that's going to be creepy. Or not.
Or wonderful.
I don't find
or
that
creepily
creepy.
Wonderful.
You know why I think this is okay?
Yeah, we're going to be wonderful.
I would propose this, Lindsay. It's okay because it's useful.
It's useful and it's not... there's nothing... It's not going to hurt me in any way. But it is a slippery slope.
It could hurt you.
But I think that
shorts out on your wrist, catch on fire.
Larry Page even said
this.
You're
wearing silk, you never know what can happen.
He said, the problem is when we announce we're going to do stuff, people see that first and they decide it's creepy. When you experience the value of it first before we announce it, then you don't get that creepy reaction because you've seen the value and you're willing to trade a certain amount of information for a certain amount of value.
I love you.
You think I'm a Google apologist?
You're just an apologist.
Well, I apologize. I didn't...
you love this. Everything is great.
They could also use some help with how they articulate change watch their announcements.
Face. Like what?
Like, for example, a direct quote from this past Google I.O. over the summer.
Yeah.
Sundar Pichai said, "We want to know when you're at home right. with your kids."
I think this is the problem. They've used it, and so they get the value of it. This is exactly what he was articulating. And the problem is, until you've used it, it seems creepy. So I agree with you. They are not very good at expressing it because it is creepy until you've used it.
They should follow the Apple. I mean, Google is better at this than Apple is, but when Apple does something along these lines, they say it's magic. We don't know how it works.
It's magic.
You don't know how it works.
Isn't that good? Now I understand why they say that.
Okay.
Who could resent magic?
This thing does have settings, but you can't change the language.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It follows the language on the phone, so you have to change the phone.
Oh,
Ixnay on the language play.
Sorry.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Holy cow, Malventano. You're never coming back, Mr. NSA analyst.
Sorry.
That makes sense. I like this thing.
Hey, congratulations to...
it's a big clunker, though.
It's a little clunky.
It is kind of big, yeah.
I'm waiting for the Moto 360 will be round. That might be more desirable.
Everybody's waiting for that.
What about this HP watch that came out of left field? HP announced, and I don't know when it'll be good, a smartwatch that they had Michael Bastien. Do you know who that is? You're fashion forward.
I'm not that fashion forward. No, actually, I don't, but I think it's ugly.
Yeah. That article's title actually looks good. It doesn't actually
it's
look good.
It's not really that attractive. It's pretty, it's like, I'm looking forward to the Moto 360.
Huh?
It's like, what is your
HP watch and got this?
Are you recording? But see,
I like the HP watch.
I can send
there.
Text messages.
New one?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, the calculator, the HP calculator watch. I'm very excited.
I actually have a original Fairchild watch with the.
There you go. That's it, Chad. You found it. Look at that.
Oh, you got to add watch. You're gonna.
Alan, tell me the truth. You wore that watch for years.
The HP calculator watch?
Yeah.
No.
I wore a Casio calculator
watch for years.
The one with
that
the stylus?
That was the superior one.
The one with the address book in it?
Yeah.
Not the stylus, no.
You didn't go that far back. You're too young.
You're too young.
The watch had a stylus because the buttons were so small.
No, I was so small then. My fingers were small enough.
You could do it.
I could use the
watch. You were a young man.
Yeah.
So I find this very interesting that HP out of nowhere, this isn't an Android Wear watch. It will support both Android and iOS.
Interesting.
It will have an app that you can install. They're doing their own software, and we know how well HP does software, so it's going to be exciting.
Hmm.
I think everybody has to try it. Every single manufacturer has to get some skin in the game, because if it does take off, they have to be...
Yeah, that's true.
It's an insurance policy.
If it's the next new thing... We
paranoia.
Wanna,
right.
There,
yeah. It's never been a successful next new thing. I mean, how many times has the industry
Microsoft
tried smartwatches?
With a spot watch, remember that?
Yes.
I had a watch you had to hold up to the screen. Remember
that was that? Great, yeah.
And that would put your calendar.
Timex made that watch.
That's the one I had.
Yeah, you had that one? The Timex?
That was Timex?
Yeah, Timex Microsoft.
That was Timex.
And it would program your watch by blinking on the screen.
The Misfit Shine, the wristband thing, uses that technology with your phone.
But how can you use that technology nowadays with the LCDs? They don't.
Well, that's what
like
happened
that.
To the Timex watch.
It flashes intentionally.
Yeah. It just flashes.
They needed a CRT to work on the Timex watch. I guess they've licked that, so to speak.
I just wish there was more customization in what the Google Now stuff shows on the phone. Like, for example, like Ryan Shrout, my editor-in-chief, we all, he's dealing with emails for other people at the website.
So he gets a lot of crap.
He says, hey, Alan, you have a flight tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it came up on his watch as if it was him, right? Yeah. So his watch thinks
he's flying. That's Ryan's fault because he's having everything channeled into his personal email. He needs to.
No, it's two separate email accounts.
He has the phone pulling from both. Ones.
This is cheesy.
Somehow it gets mixed up for him.
Price look at this. It's a piece of
cheese. It's cheap. It's $200. It's not that expensive.
$200 is a lot to pay for a bunch of plastic.
Well, but let me tell you. This is a 22-millimeter watch band. It's a standard watch band. I could get alligator. I could get crocodile. I could get snakeskin.
Oh.
So how much
But for the $200, you get the crap.
You get a rubber band.
Yeah. Jeez. I don't think it's that useful.
It's upside down.
That's because John probably...
No, I didn't do anything. Just blame me for everything.
That would be a good one, John, if you got the watch band attached upside down.
Some
while you're
way
playing.
That you can't even wear it. That would be cool.
Apple has officially closed its deal for Beats Music. Are you excited?
Are they selling them themselves now? What are they doing? Like on their website?
Is that on the Apple store now.
Yeah, and all the employees are now Apple employees.
Right. Well,
Except for the ones who aren't.
Except for the salespeople.
Right.
I guess.
And the HR.
Is it to like 200 people? 200 jobs being...
That's not shuttered. A lot. And then actually there's a little dispute over really whether that many jobs are lost and so forth. Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre will have offices in Cupertino, which they'll never visit. The biggest change...
And why should they?
And why should they? They've got a business to run.
That's true.
The biggest change is that iRadio is now going to be run by a Beats guy, a former Beats executive. And I'm trying to find his name. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
It seems like that can only be a good thing.
iRadio is an example of a great service that could use a little of the Beats glitter because nobody even knows it's there.
Even though it's built right in.
I know.
Which is kind of funny.
Apple says actually it has a significant number of users. I can't remember the total number. It was 5 or 6 million. It was a lot of users. You don't hear a lot about iRadio.
Well, I personally use Pandora a lot, but my wife used the iRadio stuff.
Oh, okay.
All the time.
It's actually really good, and it's free.
Yeah.
I think it's free.
It is free.
Yeah, free with ads. If you have iTunes Match, it kills the ads.
Okay, so for $25 a year, which is nothing compared to Spotify.
Cheaper than Pandora subscription.
Yeah. They still have that Beats streaming, and I don't know if the plan is to. Apparently, it's not to fold it in.
Not yet.
Sounds like they're going to keep it around because they like the product. This guy Ian Rogers, who's running Beats Music,
that's
going to be
guy.
The one who gets iTunes Radio.
Yeah.
And this was a long time coming that they needed a subscription service. They'd resisted it for a long time.
Steve did not believe that people wanted it. I think that's really what held Apple back.
Steve also didn't believe that people wanted a 7-inch iPad or a video iPod. Or
a larger iPhone.
People will never read books on a tablet, he said. Okay. Beats. Now, somebody's saying, Amazon Prime has free music. Yeah, Amazon Prime has like 2 million songs compared to the 20 million songs on Beats.
Yeah.
And on iTunes.
I've never even fired up that music. I have Prime, but it's, I've never used it.
It doesn't have anything you want. It's just like Netflix for music. It's free, but it doesn't have anything you want. I'm worried about Radio Shack, and I'll tell you why.
Uh-oh.
Excellent transition.
In just a moment. No, I wish they were a sponsor. You know, we tried to get Radio Shack to buy ads some years
ago. That's actually not a bad idea.
They would have been, I wish they had because they're basically headed for.
Well, I don't,
So if they had advertised here,
do the ad, we'll
everything
talk about
would be
them.
Different.
They had an ad campaign recently about, like, it's update your store. What was that? The 80s called, they wanted their store back or something.
Campaign.
And it was a great campaign.
That was
a
great ad. That was probably the last money that they had.
Yep.
They're just calling themselves the Shack now, right?
The Shack. Yes.
Well, that was part of that same.
Place is falling apart, I think.
They lost almost $100 million last quarter. They have $62 million in cash left. They're burning money very rapidly. In fact, according to CNN Money and Fortune, they don't have enough money to close their 1,100 stores.
That's weird.
Things are so dire. Radio Shack actually doesn't have enough money to close the 1,100 locations they need. They say they need to shutter.
Well, they can abandon them.
Just walk away.
How much
away
money
from
is
it?
That? Yeah,
you
walk.
You can't. You have employees.
Yes,
you have to give them severance.
No. Chapter 11. And
well, that's what they'll have to do. That's the fear.
They can't. I think it's with $62 million in the bank. They
investors,
can't unless they can balance their books.
Credit ratings agencies and the company's lenders. I'm sorry, seem to be in agreement. Radio Shack's days are numbered.
Radio Shack has a market, I just pulled this up on the Bloomberg, has a market value of $58.5 million despite having $61.8 million in cash. Their market value is lower
less than, their
than the
cash.
Amount of money they actually physically have.
Well, because,
so what's because their book value? Expenses.
I don't know how to find that.
It's got
to
be on there.
The problem, of course, is yeah. You...
Oh, $6.11. Are you asking for the share price?
No,
the
book value. What's the share price?
John likes to throw in financial terms.
No, I'm just wondering. The thing may be worth more dead than alive. It's possible.
Maybe. There are 4,000 stores total. Radio Shack's having a hard time, given the low amount of money they have left, coming up with a turnaround plan.
I think I know what part of the problem is with Radio Shack.
What?
That is the back third to one half of the store.
That's the best part.
But here's the thing. I dabble a lot in electronics. I assemble stuff. I, you know, put stuff together.
Right.
I don't go to Radio Shack.
That's, you're the problem.
Where do you
that's
live?
The thing. This is
where
why. This is exactly.
Anymore,
I want to know where he goes.
Anymore, just online.
He lives
just
in Florence, Kentucky.
Order the parts online.
You live Amazon. Florence, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But, okay. One
See,
of the things
Berkeley,
that was great about
Lashers.
Radio Shack.
It's a big
yeah. Well, you have Lashers. But the great thing about Radio Shack is every small town in America had a little
right.
Radio Shack.
But the problem is for me is that if I want something specific, chances are it's not right. in that back third to half of the Radio Shack.
So that's why my position was. Come on Twit, advertise to geeks like Alan. Say, look, your town needs a store where you can buy an Arduino, where you can buy a Raspberry
right.
Pi, where you can buy
right.
diodes and resistors and circuits. They should have had a maker shop in the makerspace in
yes.
the back, a hacker space. They should have reached out to the geek community and said embraced it.
They've
and
tried.
Said, no, they haven't.
No,
they started
that.
They
be
did.
Advertising.
It was just really
they
late.
They should hire oh. you to give
really
them advice.
They started selling remote control vehicles, speakers, and cell phones.
Right.
That's that front third of the store, and they couldn't get consumers
they
in.
They tried a little bit late, though. They've been advertising in Make magazine. I've seen
have
it.
They?
Oh, yeah. They realized no. it. It was just only really in the last
had
year,
they bought
year and a half.
When we pitched them 2 years ago, we could have saved that company. Just remember that.
There you have it. There's the ad for the company.
Seriously. Okay, maybe not to it, but reaching out to the geeks was the right thing to do. Tech TV did the same thing. Instead of saying, let's embrace the geeks... We want to be more general. We want to reach a broader audience. So they put manga on and they put cops on and stuff. And it failed because it didn't appeal to anybody. And in a world where you've got Amazon and all these online retailers,
right.
the only way you're going to beat them is by providing something they don't offer, which is service, which is a human being, a human face. And if they'd reached out to geeks and said, I don't think
they could afford to do it. Because I think what he's discussing is getting specific piles of transistors for whatever you're building. They wouldn't be able to carry that much SKU.
Right, right. right. Yeah. Here's a perfect example. So just within the past couple of weeks, we put together a little box with a bunch of variable resistors built into it that goes out and controls all of our light panels in our studio.
Right.
Right. So we made our own remote yeah. light panel controller. Yeah. So I needed these very specific parts to put
online.
That together.
You're not even getting the car.
Now, Lashers, by the way, Lashers, which is a...
Well, I'm asking you, how does Lashers survive?
They have a big...
They have it all.
They have everything, but they have it like it's behind a counter. So if you want some whatever transistor or ICs or whatever you want, you tell them, and they go in the back because they
Human
can find
service.
Them.
Okay.
It's like a car parts place.
See, that I would have went
like
to that place.
Pull.
You can go to a car parts place and ask for right. like some
you
air
gone
filter.
I would have gone there.
And you would have loved it. Not only that, you would have haunted it. And
actually,
that's what people do at Lashers. They go on Saturday morning. They go hang out
You know
at
who
Lashers.
I saw there? I went to Lashers to pick something up. Cliff Stoll was there.
Perfect.
But you should, when you're in the Bay Area, you should go check it out just to see what a place should be like.
Cliff's an astronomer at Berkeley. He wrote The Cuckoo's Nest and was a regular on Tech TV doing a column about how horrible technology was.
No, he was a technology hater.
He hated
a genuine
it.
One, not me.
Not like you.
No, I'm different.
He was real. He was a real deal.
His whole goal in life was to get people out of the house. Get away from the computer yeah. screen. Go take a walk.
We had him. He actually, you know what? We should see if we can get him for our New Year's show. He built a Macquarium on Call for Help. It was very cool. He was a great guy.
But for a big store like Lashers to survive, does it have to be in a market like Berkeley where you've got people at the
yeah,
lab
maybe.
Who are doing,
a
they're building,
town.
They're
yeah,
doing
maybe.
All sorts of
yeah.
things that require that yeah. kind of inventory.
Yeah, you're right.
And then you have to have the personnel there that
in
knows.
San Rafael. That's
what is it?
Similar. Same, just like Lashers. I don't know. I just feel like it's a sad day because Radio Shack was, I mean, for many people, it was their first computer, was their Tandy.
Well, this is where I think yeah. they really dropped the ball. They had a major
yeah.
platform
yeah.
all to themselves
yeah.
that they could have taken much further. Then they bailed.
Also, they were selling things that you couldn't easily find anywhere else at the time. Like in the 90s, if you needed a coax cable,
exactly.
where would
you
go? You
couldn't get anywhere
now
else.
You,
I
get
still
an
go
HDMI
to Radio Shack.
Best Buy or CVS.
I still,
or
if I need a lithium 3032, CR3032 battery, there's certain things I still go to Radio Shack. And I think it's a loss that you cannot... Is that my phone?
My phone.
Oh.
Sorry.
It was very pleasant.
I get about one... You know, it's a fluke because I normally
calls?
Have dog bark.
Yeah.
Who gets calls?
Who gets phone calls anymore?
Yeah,
what is that all about? You usually have a dog bark? So that's Mimi's ringtone.
No.
No?
This is my daughter's. Let me...
Does she have a specific ringtone?
No, I don't. No. That's corny.
But useful.
I like to be surprised.
Oh, it's you. It's you.
Yeah, let me get you the... No, go on. Do the ad.
Okay.
You've been putting off the ad now for too long.
You know what I love?
Audible.
Yes!
I knew it.
You could tell by the look in my eyes that I was about to talk about the world's best audiobook store, audible.com.
I think it's the only bookstore.
There were others.
I think they're just like WebEx and the rest of them.
Yeah, I think Audible really owns
it. The ones that advertise on your show stay in business.
Exactly. I'm not going to say anything, but...
I used to have an old saying at PC Magazine, anyone who advertised next to a Dvorak column always stayed in business.
Yeah. The salesman said that, right?
Always successful.
Yeah. So I'm listening to Graham Nash's new book, Wild Tales. Oh, he is. I love him. You know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you've heard of them?
No.
The Hollies. A Rock and Roll Life. He narrates it. It's really, I love this kind of stuff. Because I've listened, and so Audible knows what you listen to, and I hope this is okay with you, John. Suggests other books you might like. Because I listen to Keith Richards' My Life, which is awesome.
As long as you're not spying on your email to get these recommendations.
No, they're not. They just see what I buy. We're going to have, I mentioned Kevin Rose on Monday on Triangulation. The following Monday, Andy Weir, who wrote one of my absolute favorite Audible books, The Martian. Have any of you read The Martian?
Yes.
Mm-mm. You read it. See, I knew I liked you. It's Robinson Crusoe on Mars, right?
It's pretty interesting.
He gets left behind on Mars and has to survive like a year and a half with what he's got on hand. It would be a wonderful graduate college course. Like, here's the stuff you have on Mars. Can you live a year and a half? And what would you do to solve it? And it's an education listening to it, but it's also human. It's beautiful. You cry at the end. I won't tell you why you cry. It could be good. It could be bad. No spoilers here, but you will want to read this. And Andy Weir will be our guest. I'm really thrilled. An hour to talk to him a week from Monday. So maybe this would be a good time to download and listen to The Martian. I'll tell you what, I can get you two books for free. So highly recommend The Martian. You know, we've interviewed Daniel Suarez on Triangulation. His books are always great. What do you listen? I know John loved The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. You still recommend that?
Everyone should read that. It's an outstanding product.
Another great Audible book by John Perkins. The true story of the highly paid professionals who go out to countries that are in economic dire straits with bags of money, trillions of dollars, get them to do things that maybe aren't in their best interest, but are in the best interest of major multinational conglomerates. It's in it, and you think this is true.
Oh, I'm telling you, just read or listen to the book on Audible.
It's hard not to believe it.
Actually, we listen to it.
It's really, really good.
It's fairly hard not to believe it.
Yeah. So if you like politics, if you like fiction, if you like science fiction, Audible is a great place. 150,000 volumes. I'm also I just want to tell you, I am also an intellectual.
What?
I listen to literature. What are you laughing at? Why are you laughing?
She's cracking up. I don't blame her.
I am not the ignorant fellow you presume me to be.
No. Listens to literature. I've been listening to literature for some years now.
I love good literature. Have you read this, The Goldfinch, yet? Oh, it's so good. Isn't it good?
Very good.
Donna Tartt, who was one of my favorite authors, she wrote The Secret History, which is also brilliant.
I had a hilarious conversation with a friend of mine, though. I was in the middle of reading it. I was about halfway through. And he was like...
Right where I am, so no spoilers.
Okay, no spoilers. This does not involve spoilers. And my friend was like, hey, I'm reading this. I asked him what he was reading, and he said, I'm reading this great book called The Goldfinch, and it's a mystery. Yeah. It's about art.
Yeah, yeah.
And he starts to describe it, and he said, have you read it? And I said, no, because I'm really bad at remembering the names of the books that I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds
familiar.
Yeah, and he keeps going. And I was like, no, I'm reading that right now. Actually, I'm actually reading it at this moment. It was pretty funny.
So good. If you like literature, maybe not for you, John.
No.
John likes literature.
I like comic books.
What do you...
Do you like mysteries?
Yeah, I like mysteries.
You might like it.
Oh, okay. Well, let me check it out.
It's about a kid, too.
My thing is, I like Audible when you're driving around, but generally speaking, when I'm reading off a Kindle.
So you know what I'm doing with this one? And it's the first time I've done it. I love it. Whisper Sync.
Don't know what that means.
So on some books, you can buy after you buy the Audible book, you get for a reduced price the Kindle book.
Ah.
And then you go back and forth. So I'll read it on my iPad when I'm lying down. And actually, you can have the audio going. It'll highlight the words.
You don't use a Kindle?
No, I just have an iPad.
Kindle's the best.
I like a Kindle. I just don't want a different device for every activity in my
life. Why not?
So which reader is it that is highlighting the words?
Well, the Kindle will do it, and now the Kindle app on iOS and Android will do it as well. Huh. And you download the audiobook, you download the physical book, you can highlight the words. If you stop reading, you can pick up where you left off. It knows mm-hmm. where you left off in the car and vice versa. I just love this. So if you are a person who likes to read words too, Audible still is a great, because in the car, you can't read, or at the gym when you're, I know, John, you are a gym rat.
I am.
Pump iron like nobody's business.
Like nobody's business. That's the right word.
The last thing you can do when you're pumping iron, when you're lifting that heavy metal, is hold a book. It would be hard.
Yes.
But if you have Audible.
That's exactly what I do.
It's awesome. We interviewed a really great guy on triangulation, Mark Majadovnik. He's very well known in Great Britain as a science guy. He's got a book called Stuff Matters, Exploring the Marvelous Materials That Shape Our Man-Made World. Why is glass see-through? Do you ever think about that? What makes elastic stretchy? Why can you bend a paperclip? These are things that I wonder all the time.
I can imagine.
Why could I bend that? Well, Mark explains it. He's funny. He's just great. I love Mark. And so the point being, there are books in every genre. And this is a bookshelf just waiting for you. I want you to go to audible.com/twit2. And what we're going to do is we're going to give you a month free of the Platinum account. Now, that's the two-book-a-month account, 2 credits a month. Most books are 1 credit, like 95% are 1 credit. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal as part of your subscription. You got it for 30 days. You pay nothing. If you cancel in the first 30 days, that's it. You'll get to keep the books. You owe them nothing. I think you're going to stick around. Audible is a really fabulous resource. Even if you still like reading paper books, having Audible when you're in the car, when you're in the gym, when you're walking the dog is awesome. Audible.com/twit2. 2 free books waiting for you. Twitter had a pretty good quarter. Although, maybe it shouldn't have. So Wall Street was very happy to hear that not only were Twitter's profits good, and I think Twitter kind of controls that. You know, they can make as much money as they want or don't want by just putting more ads in the stream. They blew away expectations. But the most important thing, I think, from the point of view of Wall Street is users were up. They had been going down for a few quarters. And people were a little concerned that Twitter might be over. Some of the increase maybe had to do with the World Cup. That was probably the most tweeted event of all time. Dick Costolo in his analyst call said he thinks new users are coming to Twitter because their onboarding process is better. That's where they welcome you. They give you a little, lay around your neck.
I didn't notice
champagne.
This.
Champagne. Welcome to Twitter.
They are doing kind of a better job explaining what it is and who's there.
I think that they needed to do that early on and didn't do a good job of it. And I think now it's so widely used that if you don't know what Twitter is,
but here's the problem. I always say that I think Twitter's problem is social anxiety. A lot of people sign up for Twitter and they do one of two things. They either just follow a bunch of people and then they lurk, or they try to participate, and because it's hard to build up followers, they're anxious, right? They throw things out into the universe, and nobody answers, and then they feel dumb, and then they kind of stop. So I think what Twitter's trying to do is build up sort of a stronger lurker culture, which is really probably what they need to be successful, right? People use Twitter more as something that they absorb rather than something
they participate in. So don't feel bad that you have 100 followers or 12.
Right, because we're a service for you.
That's not why you're there.
Exactly.
You're there to read the feeds of others.
Yeah, you're there to find out what's going on.
Twitter's really not for you. It's for Justin Bieber. Really, is what they should say. No, that's what they should say.
They should say that. Yeah.
This isn't for you.
This isn't for you, loser.
If you're a believer, it's for you, but not if you're just a normal person.
By the way, I need more followers. The real Dvorak.
See, he's got that anxiety you were talking about.
At the real Dvorak.
He's got that. He writes
something.
He seems
very worried.
Nothing happens. It's
just
dead
silence. I get no respect.
So here's the trouble in paradise, and I think this is fair. Wall Street Journal pointed this out. Despite the fact that they're gaining in new users, most people never go to the website or use the Twitter app. Sure, that's wrong. Most people do. But about 40 million active users don't.
Use the Twitter app.
They don't see Twitter ads at all. Now, that's only 14% of the total. Mm. So it isn't anywhere near the majority. But that number may be going up. And that's something Twitter needs to watch out. That's why they killed the third-party apps, or tried to. I never go to Twitter's. I rarely go to Twitter's site. And I know I don't see any ads. Are they going to have to put it in the stream to really monetize?
I think they're probably exploring this really actively right now. And just like, and this is kind of, I guess I've been saying this the whole show, just like nature abhors a vacuum, the advertising industry abhors a missed opportunity.
Right.
And so somehow this will, I mean, you got to bet that Twitter is having back-end conversations with all of these third-party apps.
Isn't there a tension between the advertising industry, who would like to put ads every freaking where they can, and the businesses and the users who say, well, hey, come on, knock it off. We don't want to see ads everywhere, right? Twitter has to balance those interests. They can't just say, hey, advertisers, let's put this in the stream. That could really chase
And they are trying. They are trying. They have, what's it called? The Twitter has an ad product, where they basically work with publishers to share the revenue from a single ad.
Ah.
So it's kind of a twofer. So, you know, let's say...
So two publishers are in one ad?
A broadcaster has a tweet lined up that includes an ad, and they share that revenue with Twitter.
Oh, that's
It's called Twitter Amplify. That's what it's called.
Twitter Amplify.
Yeah, so Twitter's working on a way to get a little bit of revenue from somebody else's advertising, and it seems like that might be a model for getting revenue from...
And why would the networks go along? Why would they share their revenue?
Well, probably because the people paying for the ads are very interested in social exposure, but they want to do it in partnership with people who they think will get attention on social.
Well, I understand the advertisers, but why would the Wall Street Journal share revenue with Twitter?
Well, because
why
it has
should
to.
I give you? Oh,
because it wants
a
new revenue stream, and it's to do it through Twitter, it has to share the share the money.
I want to thank the guy who tweeted. He said, I'm not watching right now. I'm watching a movie, but I'll watch later. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. This is why Twitter is so great. That kind of direct conversation. John, really, are you being facetious? You want more followers? Or do you really feel some value in having followers?
I'm below 100,000, and then now everyone mocks me for having such a low number. Even though it's a reasonable number.
You know who's terrified? If you're a Hollywood star and you have 50,000 followers.
Oh, you're not going to get work.
Well, you're not going to get work.
They pay for them.
They buy them.
Congress representatives.
Yeah. I don't like the idea of paying for anything, but I would like to have...
Except for wine.
I will buy wine, yes. This is true. I spend too much money on wine, probably.
Yeah.
Yes, I could use some more followers.
Paula Deen in the chat room, not that Paula Deen. Maybe she is, I don't know. Says that... One revenue source that Twitter has not mined is when we show tweets or news organizations show tweets, and they don't pay Twitter for that right. Do you think Twitter could go to Bloomberg Business Week and say, they've already started doing that thing where you should embed it, right,
with their special... Yeah, and I think those are counted in the off-site numbers that they were talking about.
Yep.
Would Bloomberg be upset if they put an ad in there?
It's not. I don't think it's in the terms right now that they could do that.
I think that'd be a problem. Shady.
Can you say Bloomberg with that droopy dog?
Bloomberg.
There we go.
Really
missed
Everybody
that.
Everybody knows droopy dog is Bloomberg number one fan.
It doesn't take much to get him going. It's weird.
It's easy, really.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to learn the German accent. I can't do one.
There's got to be an app for that.
John comes here. He's really...
Accent tutor.
He thinks of things.
Yeah, it's on the YouTube.
Yeah.
It is? I don't know if I get it. Oh, maybe.
You can learn anything on the YouTube.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I couldn't get the Christopher Walken down, even though there's a million of guys on there doing that.
We'll get... Next time Kevin Pollak's here, we'll have him do master classes in...
That would
Pollack.
Be great.
He could do it. If anybody could teach you how to do Pollak, it would be that's a good show.
Walken. Yeah.
That's a good show. Pollak teaches Dvorak... Walking.
That would be good.
Would that be a recurring show?
Yeah, because I'll never get it. Probably do that show and do it three times.
Weekly.
Weekly years again.
And we thought when we started this show that there really wouldn't be a lot of legs, but teaching Dvorak walking.
Is that your Pollak?
Yeah. No, I don't do a Pollak. Or
you almost did one right there. Or, didn't notice it.
Kevin's a nice guy. He sent me an email the other day.
Oh, did he? Isn't that sweet?
Yeah. My personal friend, Kevin Pollak. Twitter also is doing the...
Have you done this story, by the way, about Microsoft and China that...
No, China's investigating Microsoft for antitrust activities.
Does anybody know anything about this story?
Yeah.
China's investigating everybody.
It's called a shakedown. You ever heard of it?
The EU does them all the time. Yeah. I know that.
They raided the offices, several offices that Microsoft owns in China.
This is your beat.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. International.
Yeah, we've been covering
this.
Qualcomm is under the same pressures right now in China. China also appears to be tilting their smartphone market in favor of local companies. So Lenovo and Xiaomi are benefiting from...
What a surprise.
...some moves that are hurting Apple and Samsung. For example, the carriers, the Chinese government told the carriers to stop subsidizing so much of the phone's cost. So that would essentially make... You know, here you go to the Verizon store, you get an iPhone for $200, but it actually costs $650 to the carrier. They subsidize the cost to lower the price for you. China's telling their state-owned cellular carriers not to do so much of that. So
you have to pay too much for the phone.
The iPhone becomes $700.
And do you feel, though, that Microsoft has become a target of late? Because last week, China government said you cannot buy Windows 8 for government work because we believe Microsoft is, or the NSA through Microsoft, is spying on us. That seems targeted. It feels like Microsoft's aiming. Microsoft's a target of China. What would
Microsoft
point
has
be
long
there?
Been a target of. I mean, some of the Chinese government divisions weren't paying for. They were pirating like Word and Windows,
right?
Which has been a problem for a long time. And on Microsoft's last earnings call, they said China's still a trouble spot, and we don't see it improving anytime soon.
But hasn't China been targeting Apple too? I mean, similar kinds of conversations, right? Sort of like you were saying, it doesn't. If you're a large company and you're in China, China's got its eye on you.
Yeah, the geopolitical tensions right now with the U.S. are pretty bad, so a lot of the American tech companies are getting punished, just like, you know, Walmart and everybody else is having trouble over there.
Is it, though, that they really fear they're being spied on, or is that just a lever in some sort of deeper negotiation that's going on? What is it that China wants?
Well, part of it has to do with the fact that our government is blocking out a lot of Chinese companies from getting deals. CTE and Lenovo trying to sell networking equipment to cell carriers.
Yes,
and
a congressional report said businesses shouldn't buy ZTE or Huawei.
For fear of spying.
Because of Chinese government spying.
And so this could, you know.
This is just a tit for tat.
Yeah.
Payback. What do you think, Mr. NSA analyst?
Well, we have had routers come from overseas with, like, spying firmware.
Yeah, and we know how to do the same thing, apparently, right? Because according to those Snowden documents, we're pretty good at putting that kind of stuff in routers.
I think we're probably better.
Who's better at subverting routers? That's the question.
I haven't heard of, like, us going that far.
That's how good we are. I've never heard of that. That's how good we are.
If it was actually happening, that
actually, you know, DEF CON and Black Hat's coming up this week.
It's true.
You going?
No, but
why?
Father I've never been.
Oh, that's actually kind of cool. You'd enjoy it because everyone would know you and they would come
and
up
hack
to you.
Me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, you would totally be a target.
They'd probably hack your phone
and
hack that
watch.
I'd
put a lot of sexy texts on my phone and just wait for it to show up on the wall of shame. Wall of sheep, I think it's called.
It would be there in 5 minutes, probably.
Boom, like that.
They might be able to get that.
Father Robert Ballister's there. They wouldn't hack a priest, would they?
Yes.
Of course they would.
First thing.
That'd be first target.
Right away.
Especially hack a priest?
Opus Dei. No, he's going to be down there. He's going to cover for us. He goes every year. He loves Black Hat and DEF CON. He doesn't just go to DEF CON, which is the kind of the people's conference. Black Hat's the one
that's
where
the
feds go to and the big shots go.
That's where you learn stuff.
You learn how to do stuff. Yep. So we expect there'll be a lot of announcements in the next couple of weeks over security. One already kind of leaked out. We don't know the details, but the exploit is called Bad USB.
I like this one.
And I want to get, somebody's got to know the technology behind this, and I want to know what it is. So get ready, Alan Melvintano.
Oh, dear.
You are teed up. How can this work, and is it a widespread problem? I know that Steve Gibson will be talking about this on security.
This is a different layer than, this is not an auto run.
Hardware layer. No. We're not talking about an auto run.
Right. This
we're
is not auto
about
run.
Something that is actually much more nefarious. Before we do that, though, I do want to mention our friends at Squarespace.com. John, do you have a Squarespace site for Dvorak? You should.
The No Agenda Show at noagendashow.com is Squarespace.
And they don't even pay you to do that, do they?
They don't.
You do it because you love it. Is that my phone?
Yes.
You started music?
I didn't do anything. This is what you listen to?
That's good stuff.
That sounds like Bush.
It is. It is. You listen to George Bush rap.
George Bush rap?
Is that your ringtone?
I've never heard it before, Mr. NSA.
You're going to have to pay royalties on that any second now.
No, I don't think it's a real song.
Did you just start that
up? I didn't do anything. It's still locked.
How did you get that to play?
I don't know.
Duty, duty, duty.
No, somebody hacked the phone, duty. And we have an NSA guy here.
Sorry, sorry.
Duty, duty, duty.
With the only guy on a Windows box, that's why it happened.
I can't stop it. I can't stop it.
Wait a minute,
it.
We got George Bush rapping on the show, and we can't stop him. Here, just get...
Here, you turn it off.
That is weird. Duty, duty. Why is he saying duty?
Duty, I don't know. It's something...
It's kind of a catchy tune. Sometimes duty is hard. Where there is suffering, there is duty. America is duty. I can attest to that. We accept that duty in our
time. We must keep... Oh, it's Jonathan Colton.
There you go, your buddy.
My buddy.
He probably called. That's probably
called,
his ringtone.
That's his ringtone.
Yeah.
No, it isn't. I don't know why it rang, and I'm going to keep the phone over here from now on. Holy cow, John C. So you like Squarespace because, you know, No Agenda, hugely popular show.
It is.
Hugely popular show. The kids love it.
They do.
Many 11-year-olds don't watch TV. They watch. They listen to No
enough,
Agenda.
We have a wide demo.
Yeah.
Very
I watch
wide.
It.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, you can't really
which is amazing
because
it's an audio program.
Yes.
But he takes you know what I mean. Gens and he can see it. It's amazing.
Yes.
No, he doesn't do that. He's a good boy.
But
however,
we have a lot of commuters that listen to the show because it's long. It's 3-6 hours a week.
And that's one show.
Well, it could be, but no.
Twice weekly.
Yes, now on Thursdays.
So this site, you want a site that people, when you're doing the show, people can rush to that site, flood it. Hundreds and thousands of people can visit it. And the last thing you'd want is that it goes down.
It can't.
Because
it's Squarespace.
You think we're making this up, but no, this is true. Squarespace. We have tried and tried and tried.
Get a piece of the action on these.
Everybody go to No Agenda right now. NoAgendaShow.com. Everybody go there, and the listening audience and the viewing audience. Everybody go there, and I guarantee you, I can bring any site down except a Squarespace site. I cannot bring it down, and we've tried, and that's because Squarespace really is committed to not only great uptime but great response time. So Squarespace pages pop up. That's because the hosting at Squarespace is tightly integrated with the software. They do stuff behind the scenes. They explained it to me once. It went over my head, but it's very sophisticated, involving virtual servers and Java, and just it's amazing. You don't need to know. That's the beauty of it. All Squarespace templates are modern, mobile responsive design. You get the benefit of the latest, greatest, state-of-the-art web technologies, but you don't have to be an HTML or JavaScript or CSS guru. You could just point and click your way to a beautiful website that matches your aesthetic, your sensibilities, whether you're a photographer, an artist, whether you're selling online, whether you're just a blogger, you just want a great site. Visit squarespace.com. Now you can take a look at Squarespace, even try it for 2 weeks, use all the features absolutely free. All you have to do is name a site, give them an email address and a password, and you're in. You can import all the content from your existing site. Change the templates at will. They do have a developer's platform. If you're a JavaScript guru, you can do anything with Squarespace, but you don't have to be, and that's beautiful. Their newly redesigned customer help site will help you there, by the way. Look, there's George Bush. That is a weird coinkydink.
That's not George Bush. The one in the blue? Oh, over there. I can't see.
Katy Perry, George Bush. Oh. What do Katy Perry and George Bush have in common?
Answer?
Duty.
Duty.
He's good waited one. The whole show to get one in.
That's it. That's the name of the show right there.
Nailed
Duty.
It, too. Home run.
Home
so
run.
Got, like, coming in at thank the, you, the Mark bottom of the ninth.
So it starts at $8 a month. They're new. Oh, I was telling about the new help site. They've got self-help articles, video workshops, webinars. So you can, you know, get really good at this if you want to spend the time. $8 a month, the basic plan. That includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. They have mobile apps that are beautiful. In fact, if you're a photographer, they have a portfolio app that will pull the photos from your website and display them on an iPad or an iPhone for your client. So this is really actually pretty awesome. I could just go on and on. Why don't you go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, try it. All I ask is when you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIT because you're going to get 10% off. And that way they'll know you heard about it on This Week in Tech. And if they had a code for No Agenda Show, I would give it to you. But they don't. Why don't you? Oh, you don't do ads.
We don't do ads.
You only accept... This is... They're pure.
As the driven snow.
As the driven snow. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT. So, we will find out more. I think it's at Black Hat that they're going to give a presentation on bad USB.
Mm-hmm. You want the 30-second version?
Yeah, this comes from Security Research Labs in Berlin. So if you could do it with a German accent, I'd appreciate it.
I do not have, especially your Leo German accent. Yes, you can.
Okay, I will channel Carsten Knoll, chief scientist.
Yes.
He says, if you put anything into your USB slot, you could be in trouble. So what exactly is happening here?
So like any device that you have in your possession, like connected to your computer directly, you can update the firmware.
Right. Now, see, this is interesting. A thumb drive
has firmware.
But not just firmware, programmable firmware.
Sure.
No, this was my question. Why isn't it just ROM firmware? Why is it programmable?
I'd ask the same exact question.
Why isn't that locked down?
That makes no sense to me that it would be programmable.
It's locked down by obscurity. Historically,
right?
Because you plug a USB drive in, you'd need
a special
tool.
And we know how well that works.
Well, you would need some kind of special tool to be able to rewrite that firmware, just like any other firmware programming, software, right? If you have access to that firmware, you can write other code. You can make it appear as other devices. You can make it appear as a keyboard.
It can't do it through the regular USB port. It has to have like an EEPROM, something you need, electronics.
And that's what's interesting. It's a specific controller that is created by a company called Phison. Which does, in fact, have EEPROM on it.
Right.
Electronically erasable, programmable, read-only memory.
Right, which you can't just do by plugging in the USB port.
You need hardware.
You need a programmer.
I think it's light that erases it, and then you have to have...
No, not those.
Not EEPROMs. It's electronically erasable.
It's done through the port. You just have, if the device could be reprogrammed that way...
Does it make that noise?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the case with this, but... It would be theoretically possible to code a firmware, reprogrammer.
That you would put on the hard drive of the computer?
That you could have running on the host operating system and could then reprogram. I don't know if it's the case with this one, but...
That's some of the things we're going to learn at the Black Hat presentation. But I think part of the question is, okay, obviously, this has always been the case. This would be nothing new that a manufacturer of a thumb drive could put malware on a thumb drive.
They could.
Actually been done.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody who's making hardware can put malware on that hardware, and we've seen that happen. And we've seen it happen by accident, even, where there's... Yeah.
The theory was that that's how Stuxnet made its way into the Iranian nuclear facility.
It was on the USB stick. Yeah.
It was an accident.
I think Stuxnet was... I think everybody...
No, it was a safe...
Generally
there was
agrees
a
it was government written... Probably
the
Israeli and U.S.
was
government.
Off the grid,
maybe Alan
so
Melvitano had something to do with it. I'm not saying he didn't.
I was the guy defending against it.
He knew how to reverse engineer that malware, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Stuxnet and Flame and these other very sophisticated malware attacks, I think most people agree, probably governmental. And in this case, I think this was actually a brilliant idea. Iran was enriching uranium to make atomic bombs. Stuxnet attacked the centrifuges and brought them down. And the theory being that if we can break the centrifuges and have them overspin, this could cripple their ability to enrich the uranium. That sounds like the kind of warfare I like. That's good, right? Nobody gets hurt.
That's the future of warfare.
Right.
It's still, according to the American government, an act of war. If someone were to do this to us, we're going to get you, sucker.
But we can do it to them. You know everybody's going to do it to everybody, right?
We have the same kinds of rules, though. You guys know that, right?
What are the rules on this stuff?
Well, I can't quote them directly, but we have those kinds of rules. We're not allowed to just go and invade other countries.
No, you give it to the CIA. NSA is not allowed to. You give it to the CIA. They do it.
What?
You've heard of them. No, of course, that's how it's all done. It's compartmentalized. You're just a lowly analyst reverse engineering the malware.
Oh, sure.
You hand that off to somebody else who then takes it and weaponizes it, who then hands it off to somebody else who gets it into Iran, who then... So it's all compartmentalized. Nobody knows who's doing it.
But they all have to still follow
the
rules.
But they're all following the rules.
If it's an act of war,
you're pretty cynical, it seems to me, Leo.
Me?
Yes.
Well, okay, who put the USB stick in the centrifuge?
Well, let's get back to this USB stick for the beginning.
Not me.
It wasn't him. It was you, Leo.
I would have done it. Yeah. That's a great hack.
First, you know about the orange cables.
Yeah, now you know about this other thing.
Now you know about the centrifuge.
I have some unexplained travel in that time frame, but yeah. I was just going to Hawaii.
Let's get back to this USB story. So what are we going to do about these things?
Nothing. You're screwed.
Game over, man.
Game over.
What?
Well, that's what we're going to find out. I mean, we haven't really seen the details because he's going to present.
They're going to show it, yeah.
But it sounds as if a significant number of USB sticks have reprogrammable firmware. That's bad. Sure. The answer would be to only buy USB sticks that had ROM, if such a thing exists.
Yeah, right? I have a feeling that a lot of them are reprogrammable.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, I mean, what's funny is the first thing that comes to mind for me is that what you would think is the most secure is probably the most reprogrammable. That's Iron Key.
What?
Like Iron Key?
That's supposed to be like
they release firmwares. Well, no, they release firmwares. Now I don't know what the level of doing some kind of check.
See, that's bad.
Or something.
See, as you see that you can firmware update your USB key, that's bad.
This is what's scary. I'm reading over your shoulder, but the quote from this Ars story. There's no way to get the firmware without the help of the firmware. And if you ask the infected firmware, it will just lie to you.
Yeah, yeah. There's no virus.
I like the lying firmware. Right. That lying firmware.
Are you hacked?
No.
No, no, I'm not hacked. I'm good.
That's very similar.
There are rules.
No, no. that's along the lines of how people used to hack DirecTV. DirecTV would try to figure out if you had hacked your card.
They'd push the signal down.
You would reprogram your card in such a way that it reported back to the box, oh, no, I'm not hacked.
Those were the good old days. Remember that? They'd send a code down. You'd reprogram your card. It was that cat and mouse cat?
Yes.
And then they toast the card.
Yeah, they fried it. Yeah, it was all over.
I remember I had DirecTV. I think it was DirecTV. And they had they were going to go to new cards. So they sent you another card. And they said, you got to put this card in within the next week.
Yep.
But before you do, type in some. You had to send something to it. And then it would toast the card that was in there. You got this burnt card out.
Yeah, because they don't want you passing that along.
I should have taken that card out before I fell for that gag.
It would have just.
So here's what they say they're going to do at Black Hat next week. They're going to take a brand name USB stick, and they're going to transform it into a computer keyboard. So you plug in the stick, it opens a command window on the computer and enters command that causes it to download and install malicious software, malware.
Yep.
So you plug it in, all of a sudden, a command line opens up, boom. That will get around user access control.
Yeah, it's using your credentials. You were logged in when you plugged it in. So
that's why you should be a limited user. Then they will transform a brand name USB stick into a network card.
Mm-hmm.
Once active, the network card causes the computer to use a domain name system server that is malicious. So when you enter in yahoo.com, you get badyahoo.com. That's a well-known malware attack. Yeah. Easy to do. Then they'll program a brand name USB stick to surreptitiously inject a payload into a legitimate Ubuntu installation file. The file's loaded onto the drive when attached to one computer. After the tampering only happens after it's plugged into a different computer that has no operating system on it. So you could use a trusted computer, verify that the MD5 hash says that's a legitimate Ubuntu install.
Right.
Unplug it because it's been verified and now install it. And in fact, it's not.
Only the new install gets infected. That's
finally,
creative.
They will transform an Android phone into a malicious network card just for fun.
Just go back to writable DVDs and let's give up on this stuff.
So this is really interesting. We'll know more about it. I don't know. I'm sure Steve Gibson will talk about it after the Black Hat because I think you want to hear the presentation before you say anything. According to Ars Technica, the vast majority of USB devices will accept any firmware update they're offered. There's no check. They are writable.
Yeah. You need the right tool, though. That's the thing. That's
right.
You have to have the right software or hardware.
That's some protection, right?
Well, it's security through obscurity, which
Right.
Yeah, but let's find out what the tool is and buy a few copies.
My question is, isn't it cheaper to use ROMs that are not programmable? Why don't they use non-programmable read-only memories? Why are they using erasable memories?
Imagine you're halfway through production of this whole batch of these things.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you really have to do that.
Yeah, it needs to be.
Because there's too many updates, upgrades, and the USB 2.0, 3.0, these things, they're in flux.
But who upgrades their flash drive? Nobody upgrades
their flash drive. No, in the process, until they get it. Perfected.
The manufacturer, yeah.
Yeah, and then they're cranking them out. I think it makes logical sense.
Well, we're screwed.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. So DVD, writable DVD.
Do we not DVD? We no longer use USB keys?
Let's go back to CD-ROMs.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I use them.
Let's quickly see. We had a good week. I want to cheer people up.
What?
Let's just see a little bit of the fun that you missed because you weren't here this week.
What?
On Twit. It's called Ask.
Previously. On Twit.
Get out
of Tech News Today.
The OkCupid online dating site bragged in a blog post yesterday that, quote, we experiment on human beings.
It's saying that it experiments on its users all the time by saying, hey, this isn't something that's actually rare. If you're a person who's on the internet who uses websites, everyone is constantly trying to use its data to kind of run experiments on you.
All about Android.
What was supposed to be Samsung's first Tizen smartphone has been delayed indefinitely, according to reports, with singles many to speculate whether Tizen on a smartphone will in fact ever happen.
Reddit up.
The title of this is Little Girl is Devastated That Her Baby Brother Must Grow Up.
Before you buy.
I said, that looks like a rear view mirror.
It does. It is the Papago GoSafe 260.
While you're looking at the mirror,
it's looking at the world outside.
That is true.
But is this saving it all?
It saves it all of the time.
Hey, get that Slurpee.
Marketing Mavericks.
How important is it, though, to sell individual songs versus this big release of a new album?
Most people buy singles, not albums, and we're aware of that. And yet we wanted to make an album. So there you go.
Twit. Bring your brain. We'll do the rest.
Here we go in the car wash to get rid of the slushy. Okay, good.
Well, live's important.
So, program note, Monday we will be talking to Kevin Rose on Triangulation, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. That'll be a good show tomorrow on Twit. One last story, a super, super breakthrough. This one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Stanford is going to triple your battery life. A lithium anode battery that might give electric vehicles 300-mile driving range, triple a cell phone's effective life. Wouldn't this be good news?
It would be huge news, and I think it's going to make, if it's true, and I assume it is, and assuming that the technology can be brought down to a small size pretty quickly, it's going to be really important for the entire wearable proposition. Because one of the problems with wearables is that you have to recharge them every night or every couple of nights, and that's just annoying when you talk about something that you want to wear on your body. So I think it's huge.
Of course, USA Today, doing the deep research, they found a 92-year-old professor of materials science at the University of Texas named Goodenough, who said, well, it might be expensive.
It's always expensive.
Actually, John Goodenough, he's not just anybody. He invented lithium ion.
Well, there you go. Now, and I'm in agreement with the chat room here. Another battery promise. There are about two a week. These types of reports are a dime a dozen.
Remember supercapacitors? That was
That was going to be, yeah.
I still think these technologies exist. They just haven't been able to make them
kill
work.
Whoever's in the car with the supercapacitor if something goes wrong.
Usually the big one.
Just boom.
As you say today,
supercapacitors exist.
Yeah. I have an electric
drill, right?
It's a screwdriver.
Cordless drill.
Yeah. It'll charge in seconds, 30 seconds. Yeah. It's like amazing. So it exists. And you know what, John? Guess what? A tank full of gas can explode and blow up the driver as well. Yes. Anything with enough energy to power a 2-ton piece of metal at 60 miles an hour is going to have some kill capacity.
Well, and wasn't lithium ion really expensive and a little bit crazy at first?
It was at first. But then where is this supercapacitor commercially except in your little drill?
Someday. Well, my drill's not a bad thing to have it in. I don't know.
Can you imagine how much electricity has to be stored in a supercap in a car to get the same equivalency that you have of a gasoline engine?
The promise of supercapacitors is they charge almost, right away, very fast. So.
And they self-discharge as the catch. So if you left your car
Another catch. You can't just plug them into the wall at 120 volts and supercharge it. You have to have quite a lot of voltage and amperage in there. A lot of watts to do that in 30 seconds.
You got to charge it a certain way.
Yeah. Anyway, I hope we have better batteries, don't you?
It'll happen.
Really?
It has to.
It's going to happen. A lot of people thinking about it right now.
10 years from now, you think all of us are just going to be only on the same old lithium mile?
With this, because somebody called me on the radio show today and said, I'm the next 15 years, I'm thinking about getting into technology. What is the technology that you would do now that will be the next big thing? And I said, you know, it's pretty hard if you thought 15 years ago, you know, if you'd asked me 15 years ago and I were smart, I might have said, well, you should write a chat app. Because you could make $6 billion when you sell it to Facebook. What would you say 15 years from now? Is it battery technology? Solar charging? Is it
renewable energy in general?
Renewable energy, sure.
Yeah.
I also think smart things with voice.
I mentioned voice. I think the ability to talk to anything is important.
Yeah.
I think kids want to get involved with some, go into MEMS.
Just that's kind of the future. Before nanotech, microelectronic machinery. You were the guy who explained MEMS to me.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had never heard of them, and apparently they're everywhere. They're not molecular size, but they're very, very small.
Right. The Kindle is an example.
The Kindle has MEMS.
Well, that's how that works. That's what electronic ink is MEMS. Yeah, it's just MEMS.
Interesting.
It's actually physically there. It's in it.
Is an Etch-a-Sketch made of MEMS?
I think that if it was electronic, you put a little battery in there, there would be.
You could have an electronic Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, yeah.
I have one on my desk at work, and that thing gets so much playtime.
The Etch-a-Sketch.
I have it on the far side of my desk, MEMS. And people just pick it up.
Wouldn't it be cool? You could have it be a screen.
It's the original iPad.
Did somebody build that? Yeah. All right, friends, this has been a fun show, but we, as with all good things, must call it a day. Did I do everything, Chad? I didn't mention the T-shirt. Teespring.com/twit. TEESPRING. We do these T-shirts for 30 days only because we want to create some sort of perceived value, some sort of crazy demand that wouldn't exist otherwise.
I think that's wise.
It's a psychological trick. I admit it. I'm the first to admit it.
Huh.
But it's also true that in 30 days, you will never be able to get this T-shirt again.
Mm, yeah, I can.
This is the commemorative T-shirt.
It's going to be a huge disappointment for people.
You wouldn't believe how many people.
Is that the one you finally chose?
Yeah. What do you think?
Looks good.
I kind of like the steampunk one.
Well, we own it. We'll do another one. I liked it, too.
Because it's weird.
This was close.
And I used that word.
This one won by 30 votes.
Trying it
was
to get very rid of that word.
With thousands of votes. This won only by 30 votes. So it was close.
But
so
what came in second?
Do you know what came in second, Lisa? I don't remember.
It probably wasn't steampunk. I don't think a lot of people.
No, steampunk was losing, I think. It was the lowest. Anyway, you can get it right now. Benefits the Brick House. It is our commemorative third anniversary shirt. We have it in a variety of colors and sizes. Well, two, black and white.
Two's a variety.
That's a variety. and a variety of genders, too, as well, male and female. And it's we've sold 421 towards our goal of 300, so I think we're well on our way. But if you want it, you
just need to lose a few.
Waste no time. Teespring.com/TWIT. Why do I spell twit? Of all the things that I just said, that's the easiest one. Teespring is TEE, like T-shirt. Mark, it's great to see you. Thank you for being here, coming all the way up.
My pleasure.
Mark Millions at Bloomberg Businessweek, where he covers international business, right?
Bloomberg.com/globaltech.
Global tech. So this China story is right up your alley.
Oh, yeah. We've been hammering away on that one.
That's really, I kind of wonder, you know, how do you resolve this when you get in this? And it's very hard for a company. You know, we didn't talk about, we probably should have, the judge who says Microsoft has to give up information on an Irish server, the U.S. judge. That has a huge global impact, too, where a Canadian judge did something similar, where these judges are making judgments in a nation that then reaches out into another nation is a big problem.
Microsoft fought that one, but
lost. It's good to have you. Appreciate your being here. Alan Malventano, never been on Twit before. You did a yeoman job. Actually, you did the job of a Navy chief.
Ah, thank you.
I'm really glad to have you here. And congratulations on your new
She's job, hiding in the back again.
New wife. Amy, and your new town, Florence, Kentucky.
Thank you.
You catch Alan on the PC Perspective podcast, but also writing every day for PCper.com. And I really wish, I heard you talking about it on the podcast, but your SSD, you know, directory is so useful. What are you going to do with that?
I don't know. I know you've... I know you've
I recommend it all the time.
I need to update that thing. It turned into an octopus. It was insane trying to update that thing.
Because you were the first, one of the early guys to do review and rate different SSDs, and you came up with the fact that there are really some significant differences in the quality.
There were differences, and the issue, part of the reason that I haven't updated what used to be the SSD decoder.
Right.
That started, it was just my own personal spreadsheet.
Trying to keep
just
track.
Just to try to keep track, because there were so many manufacturers, and they all had different controllers, and you didn't know what controller was in which drive, and you know, a given controller would perform similar depending on, you know, just across whichever brand it was for that model. So that's what the SSD decoder thing was. But
PCPer.com/SSD.
Yeah.
But did you not recommend it anymore?
Well, everything is dated in there, unfortunately, now.
Yeah.
And the number of controllers and the number of manufacturers is not so unwieldy anymore. It used to be that there was SandForce was
It was crazy.
SandForce was in like 15 different brand. There was kind of like a little race. Everybody wanted to make an SSD, right?
You're
Every company wanted
now,
to make an SSD.
What, does it matter which SSD you buy now or not?
Sure, it does. There's still differences, but the number of controllers is now
what's the absolute
a little bit
best
fewer.
One to buy right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, what's the best?
Period.
Intel.
There has
wire
to be
cutter of SSD.
There has to be at least there has to be at least two answers there, because there's one that's the best cost per gig, which I believe is the Crucial, either the MX100 or the M550. Which is the,
which
they are insanely
as the best SSD.
They are they're insanely, insanely low cost per gig.
$220 bucks for half a terabyte.
Right,
that's amazing.
You're talking about 40 cents a gig.
Will they continue to get just as hard?
Yeah, they're still going.
They're going to keep going down.
And the second half of the answer.
So the second half of the answer, I would say, is like the most nimble performer, right? Which right now is Samsung, like the 850 Pro, which actually uses 3D NAND.
The 3D NAND?
The flash memory is made on the same die. It's made 32 layers high. And then
Is that the TLC you were talking about?
No. This is MLC. This is MLC flash. But usually when you make a chip, it's all flat, right?
Wow. Terabyte. Yep. How much is that? $699 for a terabyte? That's not bad.
So that just launched, and the pricing is still kind of premium, but really that is a very, very good performer.
Hmm. So, how about those Evos from Samsung? You like those?
The Evo was the previous generation, and I have a suspicion they're going to make a 850 Evo as well, using that same 3D flash. And once that happens, I think their cost per gig is going to start dropping in the 40s as well, like 40 cents per gig. So it's just a matter of time.
That's
you just
the
have
one
to
wait for.
Yeah, they just need to do it.
Everybody should have an SSD drive in their computer, at least as their boot drive. It just makes such a huge difference.
It is night and day.
It's incredible. And these new PCI Express ones that Apple's been using and others now.
Yep.
Really fast,
because
you got that fast bus behind it. Thank you, Alan. I'm glad we could talk about that a little bit.
Yep.
And I want to thank you, Lindsay Turrentine, for being here from CNET, the reviews editor there.
You're
welcome. Anything you want to plug besides your regular Monday appearance on TNT?
Well, that's obvious. That's a given.
Obviously.
Yeah. What do I want to plug? CNET's iOS app just got an update yesterday.
Awesome.
And it's fantastic. It's really, I'm actually thrilled with it.
I think we're really starting to think that the way people will consume podcasts for sure is on mobile apps. And I think that's probably true for a lot of content, right?
I think so, too. And, you know, I think it's taken the whole industry a while to sort of sort out what the best way for a media app to work is. We finally decided to create a situation where you can toggle between the programming that we do. So we say these are the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, 10 stories you have to see right now. Or you can just go to latest.
Right.
And then we have so much content that it just... You know,
you need to make it.
You can go back.
That's exactly
our
issue. We have all this back catalog, but we also want to highlight the current. So we want featured stuff.
Right.
You know, NPR One, their new app, is very interesting. It's simple. It's got no controls at all. It's just you could go next.
Yeah, that's basically how ours works.
Yeah.
It's either featured or next.
Yeah.
And latest. And then it just.
And the Yahoo News Digest. A lot of companies are starting to look at simplified because people just want to get right into it.
Absolutely. But of course, it has all that, you know, it's important to me if you want to find out about a specific product, you can dig down pretty easily.
Exactly.
Or you can scan, you can scan codes. If you're in the store, you can just scan a barcode.
We're thinking about
that,
too. I think that's the current thinking in general is there's got to be two interfaces, simple and then deep.
Yeah. So that's up. That's up. And we're also doing some really fun stuff in Kentucky, actually.
Are you?
Uh-oh.
We are.
Well, that's Tech Republic.
No. Well, there is Tech Republic, but we also have CNET itself. We built a 12,000 square foot review facility in Louisville.
Really?
And we do smart home reviews there. And we're working on some other exciting stuff later in the year or two.
Might have to pay them a visit.
Does Kentucky have like an unusually low tax rate or something?
I think it's on the low end.
It's a great place to hire. Because there are a lot of educational facilities
nearby.
I love
Louisville. Louisville's one of my favorite towns. I want to move to Louisville.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to go too, John?
No, I want you to move there.
Oh. So that's really fun. We're doing a lot of smart home
stuff. You know, why don't you get the place in New York City like you promised?
We're talking with CUNY. We've got to figure out the technology. But Jeff Jarvis and his dean there at the journalism school, we're talking about building a studio in the journalism school. That would give us a Times Square studio.
That's not quite what I was thinking.
What did you want, an apartment?
Yeah.
John C. Dvorak, you are where? What do you do? Who are you? You would be...
NoAgendaShow.com twice a week.
Love that show.
A lot of people say that they've heard about it on Twit, and then they never won't go there.
Can I tell you the honest truth? I know you don't believe this. I have never heard it. I've literally never heard that show. I swear to God. It's weird.
Yeah, you say that all the time. It's funny.
I know you don't believe it.
Well, it's because
true.
You bring up references that apparently indicate you heard something.
See, this is why I don't listen, because you believe there is no such thing as a coincidence. Or is that the other guy?
I don't know what you're talking about.
John C. Dvorak, channeldvorak.com, noagendashow.com. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC, right here on twit.tv. If you watch live, we love it. We see you in the chat room. We talk. We do all that stuff. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact. Just go to twit.tv or, Stitcher, iTunes, Xbox Music, wherever you find, audio and video programming of a certain quality. You can also use our apps. We don't do them ourselves. But we have these great third-party developers. There are Twit apps for iOS, for Android. There's a great app for Windows Phone, even things like Roku, Samsung TVs, and more. So thank you. Please watch. We appreciate it. Subscribe if you can. And we'll see you next week. Another Twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can. That's great live audience. I didn't know.
You have a Twit.
Big audience.